Because if, for instance, breaking news, as of today, 2004 CIA Inspector General report shows that interrogators who were interrogating Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you know, that name that just won't go away. Remember, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was the guy who was waterboarded every 4 to 6 hours for a flipping month or something like that. Well, in between the waterboardings, we now know what was going on. Because the 2004 CIA Inspector General report shows that during these interrogations, well, let's use the language from the story. The document says one interrogator said a colleague had told Khalid Sheikh Mohammed that if any other attacks happened in the United States, quote, we're going to kill your children. Meanwhile, with regard to a different terror suspect detainee, another interrogator told him that his mother would be raped in front of him. The interrogator who allegedly said that has, of course, denied it. There is, of course, a problem of proof. Is it just me? Am I the only person, and I'm sure I'm not, because you and I, we've spent so much time together. Are we the only ones who understand that threatening to murder a family member is not proof that you are operating on the side of good and decency and light, but rather proof that you are operating well inside the bounds of outright evil? You know, not little bit evil, but horns growing out of the head, evil. Pointy tail, cloven hooves, evil. Lake of everlasting fire, hell, damnation, fire and brimstone, evil. And again, you can make the argument that since this is 2004 when this happened, I leave it to David from Maine to concur or not concur, that this is another case of these rotten bastards watching movies. Anybody seen The Usual Suspects? Anybody remember the description of the scene with Kaiser Zosé and his family? This is that. They're so uncreative that they can't even come up with their own damned evil. They have to rely on bogarting off of somebody's Hollywood script to do it. But that's not all. No. Also, in the wake of that revelation, is more. Namely, that not only did they threaten to kill the children and rape the mother, guess what else they did? Why, yes. They then destroyed the tapes. Was it a year ago? Was it less? When on this program, when they were talking about, when the news was out that there were tapes of this or tapes of that, that I said, bull. No, actually, they said it had not been recorded, and I said, bull, it was, and they destroyed them. I seem to recall that quite well. Oh, yeah, here it is. According to Newsweek, again referring to the CIA Inspector General report, in addition to threatening to kill Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's children, in addition to threatening to rape the mother of another prisoner and to do it in front of him. The CIA interrogators also staged what are referred to as mock executions. What David referred to, involving a handgun and an electric drill. That was used on Al-Qaeda detainee Abdul Rahim al-Nashri. The Newsweek story saying Nashri's interrogators brandished the gun in an effort to convince him that he was going to be shot. Interrogators also turned on a power drill and held it near him. The purpose was to scare him into giving information up. Now, there is a federal law out there that says that you cannot use torture and that torture consists of threatening a detainee with imminent death. Yeah, we know what the Bush administration thought of that. The whole point of waterboarding is to, by their own admission, is to induce a sense of imminent death. But then again, Jay Bybee, that would be federal judge Jay Bybee, in August 2002 wrote a memo advising the CIA that imminent death was not, the threats of imminent death were not illegal unless, quote, they deliberately produced prolonged mental harm. Now, that certainly leaves open the definition of prolonged, doesn't it? And they had a hissy over Bill Clinton saying it depends on what the definition of is. And they're splitting hairs over what is and isn't torture when every last godforsaken bit of it is. And it is with this background that Eric Holder says he's going to have an investigation into whether we ought to have an investigation. You know, I say draw the community chest card and go ahead two spaces and start the damned investigation. Never mind the investigation of the investigation. Let's get started. Because unless we want the Obama administration to catch the torture disease that literally does come off of the Bush administration toilet seat onto his administration, just like Afghanistan, by virtue of not ending the damn thing, has become his debacle, just like Iraq is his debacle and not George's anymore, so, too, he will sooner or later have to take ownership of torture if it is not stopped. And having been stopped, if it is not investigated and thoroughly prosecuted and those guilty put in prisons for a long, 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 long time. It was during, by the way, according to Marcy Wheeler, it was during these interrogations with the brandishing of the gun and the power drill that Abdul Rahim al-Nashri cranked out a big old honking lie and said that Al-Qaeda was working on a nuclear bomb. Here's the punchline. The Bush administration destroyed the tapes of Nashri's interrogations in 2005, with the possible exception of the couple of tapes that are now in the possession of George Bush and Dick Cheney, and to which both men masturbate wildly. So, Attorney General Holder, with all respect, don't investigate whether to investigate. I think we passed that little signpost, that little Burma shave sign, a few years back. And the fact that the people engaged in the torture didn't want to investigate is not any sort of compelling proof that you need to investigate whether or not they were right about it. Or investigate whether to investigate. Investigate. Attorney General Holder, investigate. Investigate, indict, try, imprison. That's your job. We're told you're good at it. Let's see it happen. So that's tonight. That's the show, and where did it go? Mike Malloy on his way at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, about 4 minutes from now. And an ongoing welcome to all the Malloy listeners. I hope you enjoy what you hear, and I hope you find it worthwhile. Because of my ongoing and deep respect for Mike himself and the fact that he has recommended this program and this network. That it's profound to me. Thanks to everyone who financially contributes to support the Horn. Remember, the prints are still on sale. They are going out the door. They will not be here forever, and they are a bargain. The first few people to receive them have received them by now, and I am told that they are as exquisite as imagined. There's a button you can click. It's real, real easy. And it's a tangible way that you can go, you can step forward and be part of this ongoing experiment in a new way to do radio and media in general. Whether you contribute $5 or $5,000, which would be nice, and some people over the course of their support have, it is all put to good use, and it all makes certain that there will, from one month to the next, be a Horn to tune into. We're going to get to the end of August. September is up in the air. And September is almost here. If you can, feel free to hit the PayPal button or use the snail mail address. Either way works fine. Thank you for your ideas, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room. Have you not been to the chat room? Go to the chat room. It's a heck of a lot of fun. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Peter Godbold, continuing in his recovery. He is never far from our thoughts. Thanks to Ben Birch. Everything that happens on the Horn happens because of what Ben Birch does with WhiteRoseSociety.org. Never forget that. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. It is no exaggeration when I say that they are the hardest working, bravest people I know. They face things in standing up to a multi-billion-dollar industry that many of us would question whether we would have the nerve to do. And they help keep this all going. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Steve. Welcome to the special Sarah Palin edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid. I guess we gotta, don't we? We kind of gotta talk about Sarah Palin. Stuck in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, "What a dim boy am I," John McCain. Lord God! I gotta admit, I was a little flummoxed. But then again, see, that's the thing. Right-wingers like McCain, Maverick, my ass, right-wingers like McCain really do listen to the right-wing blowhard gasbags on the radio. Because when, as soon as it was mentioned that he was considering a pro-life, a pro-choice running mate, you know, Limbaugh came right, "My friends, that would be political suicide. It would kill the Republican Party. Bring me a little boy and some Viagra and a little bit of a few Oxycontins." But, yeah, typical. And he listened. See, look, this was since McCain got to go second, he was set up with an if-then scenario. His short list had two or three or four or five or ten names on it. And the way it worked was this. If Barack Obama had selected Hillary Clinton or some other woman as his running mate, then McCain would have picked a really pasty-faced, doughy white guy as his. Since, however, Barack Obama chose Joe Biden, he had no choice but to try to, to pick Sarah Palin. The Sarah Palin pick, to try to put it into perspective just a little bit, the Sarah Palin pick, Sarah Palin is the Harriet Myers of running mates. Her nomination is going to go over about as well as Harriet Myers's did. Oh, they're stuck with her. And they're going to have to put up with her. But if you get them liquored up or something like that and get them talking, the right-wingers will tell you, "Oh, no. Oh, no." But in light of the important issues of this political season, I do have one little soundbite from her opining on one of those important important topics.
"I think there should be more race prejudice. Less race prejudice."
Oh, wait a minute. That's Michael Palin. I get him confused. But this is it. Let's see. She doesn't like polar bears. She's petty and vindictive. If you haven't already seen it, we'll get in. Troopergate. Hey, Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for Clinton administration. Troopergate. Remember Troopergate? Well, guess what? Sarah Palin's got her own Troopergate. This is how petty and vindictive this nasty woman is. Her sister, now, I don't know, maybe some of this comes of being a beauty pageant type. I'm told, although I can't speak from experience, I'm told that it can be a very, very catty sort of a thing, beauty pageants. But Sarah Palin comes from a beauty pageant background, you know, sort of JonBenet all grown up, if you will. And so her sister got married to this Alaska state trooper. And that marriage, you know, Now, I understand that marriage is supposed to be, if you're a right-winger, between one man and one woe man. And Jesus said divorce was a real no-no. But apparently, Sarah Palin's sister and some Alaska state trooper decided to tie the knot. And somehow or another, the knot came untied. And there was a nasty, nasty little divorce that followed. And in the short time, year and a half, that Sarah Palin has been governor of Alaska, she used her position as governor
to demand that the head of the Alaska State Police fire her former brother-in-law. And when the commandant of the Alaska State Police said, Madam Governor, I got no grounds to fire him. I won't fire him. She said, well, screw you, buddy. You're fired. Man, that's some pig-licking family values, isn't it? I mean, wasn't even a year and a half in office, a year in office, and started abusing the power of the office of governor. So I guess we got an idea of what's coming. But yeah, there's not a lot of it, but there are some sound bites. We get some idea of how Sarah Palin thinks.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Oh damn, that was Michael Palin again. I've got all my sound bites mixed up. I think I'd prefer Michael Palin anyway.
Press crimble, fra-dick-a-dingle, dangle, dongle.
It makes about as much sense as repig-licking economic policy, doesn't it? Of course, Sarah Palin knows about as much about economic policy as I know about deep space astrogation, but, you know, who the hell am I? But this is it's a surprisingly tone-deaf choice, although it is purely politically cynical. What we have here, I mean, let's just deal with it. What we have here is, in light of the past convention and the profound excitement that Barack Obama generated, we have in the old late 94's choice for vice president, we have the manifestation of a whiter shade of Palin. That one just came to me. Sorry. And no, Fox News, you bunch of damn dummies. She is not. Oh God, being in Alaska doesn't make her qualified to deal with the Russians. I don't care. What Brian Kilmeade said. Or Steve Ducey. Brian Kilmeade said that Senator Joe Biden will eat her alive, and Steve Ducey disagreed. Lord, you can't buy this stuff. You couldn't pay to have this written. This is just too precious.
Try to think through as a strategist what I would do if, from the Democratic standpoint. And look, one thing she's got going for it, she'll get picked on about not being up for the presidency, but her expectations are going to be so low that anything she does that exceeds them, you know, politics about exceeding expectations. We talked about this in the break.
Yep.
What is Joe Biden going to do? I mean, with Joe, who knows how to debate.
Well, he's going to capitalize. She has no international relations experience. She's not the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Doesn't need it. John McCain, that's probably his strength, right?
But the other thing about her, she does know about international relations because she is right up there in Alaska, right next door to Russia.
Believe me, Steve, it had nothing to do with that.
As videographer and chat room moderator ELO noted, I guess that makes me a veterinarian because I've got a cat. Lord God, and how about that? There are diminished expectations. Nobody expects anything of her. So what are we saying, that Sarah Palin gets a pass? She gets the political equivalent of the helmet and elbow pads and knee pads? So what? She's the political equivalent of the scrawlings that your child brings home from preschool and you put them up on the refrigerator and go, that's art, you know, because of the source? This is amazing. This is amazing. And by some sick miracle, some twisted demonic alteration of the fabric of the universe, if John McCain should become elected, and then, as many of us expect, given his cancerous history and everything, should shuffle off this mortal coil while in office. Dear Jesus, we're going to get Dan Quayle in drag for the President of the United States. It's horrifying. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome
Hi
to the program.
There.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, it gets worse. For all of you people who thought her the Dan Quayle in drag, her reference to Hillary Clinton was gracious and wonderful, and you are considering her because of that. Well, let's go back.
I don't think there's anybody in the audience who is, but, yeah, generally, rhetorically speaking, yes.
Yeah, just in case. This is courtesy of Talking Points Memo. Together on stage with Janet Napolitano in a Newsweek leadership forum a while back, she wasn't as charitable towards Hillary. She said, quote, she felt kind of bad. She couldn't support a woman, but she didn't like Clinton's whining, unquote.
Yeah, in fact, I've got the audio if you want to go ahead and play that, if we want to go ahead and play that. Yeah, let's listen to her.
When you look at the coverage, when you listen to the conversations, what do you see?
Well, you know, I think fair or unfair, I do think it is a more concentrated criticism that Hillary gets on so many fronts. I think that's unfortunate. But fair or unfair, I think she does herself a disservice to even mention it, really. I mean, you got to plow through that. You have to know what you're getting into, which I say this with all due respect to Hillary Clinton and to her experience and to her passion for changing the status quo also. But when I hear a statement like that coming from a woman candidate with any kind of perceived whine about that excess criticism or, you know, maybe a sharper microscope put on her, I think, man, that doesn't do us any good. Women in politics, women in general wanting to progress this country, I don't think it bodes well for her, a statement like that. Because, again, fair or unfair, it is there. I think that's reality, and I think it's a given. I think people can just accept that she is going to be under that sharper microscope. So be it. I mean, work harder. Prove yourself to an even greater degree that you're capable, that you're going to be the best candidate, and that, of course, is what she wants us to believe at this point. So it bothers me a little bit hearing her bring that attention to herself on that level.
Pardon me, did she say anything except accuse Hillary Clinton of whining?
Nope. May I be a trifle blunt?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, already today I have heard the right-wingers use her Down syndrome child as a political piece. That ought to make the people with disabilities advocates just see red screaming purple hissy fits. But secondly, Hillary Clinton, no matter whether you agreed with her, disagreed with her, or were up in the air, the one thing you had to give that woman, she was qualified.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
And the one thing you can say about Sarah Palin, and Sarah, sorry about this, but the only reason you were chosen to be John McCain's vice presidential nominee is because of what is between your legs, and no other reason. And that is a piss poor reason to be chosen for high office in this country.
Well, that's what I mean. This was a political, this was the highest form of political cynicism. Had Barack Obama chosen a woman, McCain would have chosen a white guy.
Now, if McCain wanted to choose a woman, why didn't he pick somebody like Hutchinson? I hate her guts, but I at least have to admit she's qualified.
Why? Because
Because Kay Bailey Hutchinson is icky, and this is, you got to understand, Susan, this is a manifestation of every of all of the right wing pathologies.
Yeah,
Sarah Palin is a past hottie, and of course, you know, so naturally what you see here is the right wing determination that a woman has to be stunningly beautiful in order to have validity. They cannot see inner beauty. And of course, there's Flush Flembaugh out there that for years has been referring to feminazis and saying that the National Organization of Women is comprised of women too ugly to get men to pay attention to them. So what you get here is, you know, she is not going back to Monty Python again, not unattractive to men. And she's got that whole, you know, five children. She's got that whole Diana Earth Mother thing going on.
So she can breed. Any idiot can breed. A cockroach can breed.
No, that is the highest calling of womanhood in God's creation, is to bring forth the fruit of her loins.
A cockroach can breed.
No, but see, you say that. That's not how the right wing thinks. What I'm trying to get across to you, while you and I look at this, Susan, and we think, you know, wow, this is really stupid. This is Dan Quayle in drag. There are right wingers out there going, this was brilliant. She's truly pro-life, and she's got the family to prove it. She has given birth five times. You know, that last time she gave birth without even appearing to be pregnant. She may be even holy and stuff. You know this part, right, Susan?
Oh yeah, I am.
She announced her fifth pregnancy supposedly in her seventh month.
Mm-hmm.
And in her seventh month of pregnancy, mind you, her fifth, she didn't even have the little Hollywood baby bump going on.
Mm-hmm.
2 months later, she announces that she has given birth. I guess there was a star over Anchorage. And three wise guys showed up on the news to announce the good news. No, she announced she'd given birth, and 2 days later, ladies in the audience, 2 days later, she's back in the governor's office. I mean, this is like one of the women out of Pearl S. Buck's the Good Earth, where you're just, you know, hoeing along and feel, boop, there's the baby. Oh, okay, keep hoeing.
Yeah.
She's one of those, she's a tough, tough woman from America's last frontier. That's how it is up there. So she gives birth, and two days later, she's back in the governor's office. Meanwhile, her 16-year-old fundamentalist pro-life daughter was mysteriously out of school for months on end with a mysterious case of mono.
Ah, with a case of romantic fever.
Well, yeah, what they used to call the kissing disease.
Yeah, I would love to see a DNA test.
And I realize that's cheap and tawdry, but, you know, what the heck?
Hey, if the right-wingers can do it, so can we. But, you know, it's
you know, I just want to see her at the Madam Governor, could you please tell us the airspeed velocity of an unladen sparrow? Yeah, I want that. I want hard questions. Yeah. Well, ma'am, what do you think? A list of, you know, maybe we could get Eugene Finnerman to write the list of questions.
Yeah, the whole thing is just condescension of a massive, it's an insult. Every woman in this country.
What does it say when old 894 can't even get Dr. Rice to run with him?
Yeah, and the sad thing is, a lot of women in this country don't even realize it. And the terrifying thing is, she pronounces nuclear like Bush does.
No.
Oh, yeah.
She says nuclear.
Yep. Oh, God, help us all.
Dan Quayle in drag. Next thing you know, she's going to start telling us how to spell potato.
Oh, God help me.
And they'll have to send her on a Latin American tour, and she'll tell us she wished she'd studied more Latin in high school.
Yeah, you know, the Republicans keep saying they're against affirmative action. Well, if this isn't affirmative action, what is it?
Well, and McCain just lost the whole inexperienced argument, too.
Oh, yeah, big time. And, hey, Sarah, don't expect Joe Biden to go easy on you.
Oh, but that's the thing. If Joe Biden goes rough on her, Susan, they'll say he was ungentlemanly.
Oh, he is going to be a perfect gentleman, and he's going to chop her into itsy-bitsy pieces because he learned the fine art of debating women against the best in the world, against Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think, and that's another thing I think this points up, Susan, is it is utterly necessary. Now, we were talking last night toward the end of the program about the necessity for the Clintons to get out and work Appalachia and work, you know, work the Midwest and so forth. Well, Hillary's really got to hit the hustings now, and frankly, tear this woman to pieces. Because this woman who has the do you know what she was before she was governor of Alaska? She was mayor of like Moose Nipple. I mean, just there's not a lot of big cities in Alaska, and this wasn't one of them.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's the town where they shot the opening credits to Northern Exposure or something, but without all the cool people.
Yeah. I mean, there's nobody there. And before that, you know where she lived?
Where?
Northern Idaho, otherwise known as the birthplace of the Order.
She's got, as far as the Wingnuts are concerned, she's got all of her bases covered, doesn't she?
Oh, God, she's a freak.
That's another good one. I'm having a couple of good nights. Moose Nipple.
Yeah, I love that one. And, hey, before I get off, I want to end up on a high note. Can our guy give a speech, or can he give a speech?
And that's the thing I hate the most about this stupid Sarah Palin revelation. Is that, and it was our buddy David in South Carolina pointed this out to me in an email earlier, you can't find a word about Obama's speech now.
Oh, I did. I found it all over the net.
I know, but I mean in terms of for-profit media coverage. It is,
well,
yeah.
Who ever expected
welcome to Sarah Palin, welcome to the Sarah Palin News Network. Yeah.
The thing that got me was I watched the speech on the Span. I watched good stuff on Span. And afterwards, though, I flipped over to MSNBC because I wanted to hear what the for-profit media was saying. And I got there just in time to hear Pat Buchanan, of all people, positively gushing about this was the greatest political speech since before Kennedy. He had heard them all. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, all of them. This beat them all.
And you want an odd coincidence? In the 2000 primaries, guess who Sarah Palin voted for?
Pat Buchanan?
That would be correct. You want to go for the bonus round? Yeah, she's a Buchananite. You know, Hitler wasn't such a bad guy, Buchanan. Yeah, that Pat Buchanan. Amazing. Just amazing.
And Pat Buchanan has already come out and said McCain is a disaster.
You know, it's tough when I find myself agreeing with that old freak, but yeah,
I really hate agreeing with him on anything, but he actually did. I mean, it's part.
Yeah, I'd like to see Hillary and this woman have a few minutes together. So she, you called me a whiner. You called me a whiner. Wait, come here. Come here. It's one of those where you put the arm around and you just sort of walk them toward the. You called me a what?
Yeah, yeah. What? The other neat thing about the for-profit media last night was Matthews saying, I'm going to be criticized if I say Obama inspired me. Ah, hell, let him criticize. That was an exact quote.
Good.
I thought that was cool.
And, you know, I'm seeing questions about, you know, is he going to get the MILF vote now? Oh, God, no. Susan, have a great weekend and a great Labor Day.
Thank you.
All right, talk to you soon. All right, bye-bye. And we'll just keep things rolling along. It is, after all, Friday. Let's try to get as many conversations in as we can. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, Philip.
Hey, Philip, what's up?
Well, let's start off with a real positive thing first. Let's, everybody in the chat room and everybody else, big, big round of applause for you and everybody that did the election coverage over the past week. It really was a lot of work, and I just want to take my hat off to you again for all the hard work that you did, really.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. It was four very, very intense days, and the fact that Guy and Mark were able to do such a heroic job out there just amazes me. It just amazes me.
Absolutely fantastic. So let nobody say that independent, non-commercial radio can't be done. Now, the Sarah Palin person.
Yeah, and I was just looking. I just saw a Photoshopped McCain-Palin ad on Democratic Underground, because I put a thread up there inviting folks to share their thoughts about this this evening. And it's a picture of Anna Nicole Smith with that old guy that she married. It just says McCain Palin.
Oh, that's got to go on the front page of your website.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. It is.
Ah, how beautiful. Well, you know what they're doing in the McCain campaign is they're trying to get all these insane dumbasses that kept wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth and everything. When Hillary didn't get the nomination, oh, my God, what are we going to do? So they're trying to get those people to come over to the McCain campaign. Now, this Sarah Palin is going to piss off the right-wing knuckle-dragger Christian Taliban people because she opposes same-sex marriages, and she says that she has some gay friends, and she's receptive to gay and lesbian concerns about discrimination, but she also vetoed a bill that would have said no state benefits for homosexuals in her state. So she kind of likes gays, but she really doesn't. And I think a lot of the Christian Taliban are going to notice that if that gets out. I'm sure McCain and his camp will keep that under cover.
Well, I think so. And she's not going to, she can't come out and say anything positive about the gay community, the LGBT community, Phil, because she was chosen specifically for her proven breeding abilities and the fact that she's pro-life.
Oh, yeah, she's pro-life. As a matter of fact, she sponsored a debate, an open debate on whether creationism should be taught in schools along with...
She's also one of those people who thinks that the Earth is younger, slightly younger than the written recipe for beer.
So here we have another drooling, knuckle-dragging dumbass. That's not really going to help the McCain campaign. I think, if anything, this is a boost to the Obama-Biden campaign. Because Joe Biden, he is a smart enough man, in my opinion, politically, where he'll be able to tear her apart and rip her up and down and change her name to Sally in a way where it won't be like he's being mad or cruel to her, but letting her have it, I think, during the debate. So it'll be interesting to see the vice presidential debate.
I think it's going to be very interesting, and there may be more buzz over that than there is over watching Obama rat smack John McCain. Okay. Hey, you want a really interesting piece of speculation here?
Sure.
Her name is Sarah Heath Palin. Okay?
Huh?
And as Susan mentioned a couple of minutes ago, she comes to Alaska from northern Idaho. Okay?
Okay.
Heath Brothers Confectionery. Remember the Heath Bar?
Oh, yeah.
Heath Brothers Confectionery was established in Robinson, Illinois in 1914. The recipe for the Heath English Toffee Bar was perfected by the Heath Brothers in 1928. In 1932, the Heaths inched their way into the national market and moved their factory to a small town in Idaho.
Oh,
now, I don't know that there is a connection between her and that, but you got to ask, what is it with John McCain, former beauty queens, heiresses? If I was Cindy McCain, I would be very, very, very nervous about this pick. Because he walked out on one, and you know, she made him sign a prenup, Cindy did.
But then again, he's had his 72nd birthday, so I don't think he'll be doing too much.
Well, like I said, there was that little photograph.
You never know, there is Viagra.
There was that little photograph a minute ago of the old dude and Anna Nicole Smith.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Well, she also likes killing things in the Arctic, too. She's also a big, big supporter. Supposedly, McCain isn't, but she's a big supporter of the drilling for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So maybe the Republicans also got her on the ticket so she can go ahead and sell to the dumbed-down Americas that it's a good idea, you know, that we go drill in the Arctic as well.
She wants to drill in the Arctic. She wants to drill... She wants to drill anywhere there's not already a derrick. She's just pathetic, and the choice is pathetic. The choice is simple-minded, frankly, the choice is an insult to intelligent women in this country. I mean,
it is, but even with the intelligent women in this country, at least during the Hillary Clinton campaign and afterwards, after Obama. Won the primaries, you know, we had intelligent women and men wringing their hands and upset and swearing to God she should have been it and he's not it. So I can see a lot of these people going over to this side with this woman, you know, the people that were on the fence, the ones that are really ultra-feminist, has to be a woman in there. I'm not voting for this person just because of her qualifications, but because she has breasts. You know, just like the same people that vote for Obama because, well, it's Nikki and progressive to vote for a black person without looking at anybody's voting records of what this woman has done. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But and something that was just sent to me a couple of minutes ago that's worth mentioning, Philip, a little something over at Daily Kos. It's being pointed out that on Face the Nation a couple of weeks ago, Karl Rove claimed that if Obama picked Tim Kaine, you know, the governor of Virginia, it would be for purely political reasons and would ignore the responsibilities of the presidency. Oh, Lord, somebody find the video of that and then put and then just run Karl Rove saying that and run a picture of Sarah Palin and then, you know, Obama Biden 08 vote.
There you go. There's the first campaign ad for these people. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out with Sarah Palin and McCain. A good portion of America know he's absolutely insane. He's been playing the POW thing left and right. You know, this guy is not a war hero. And during Obama's speech last night, that kind of turned my stomach a little bit, too, where he had to do that conciliatory thing that, well, we appreciate John McCain's service in the military. I don't appreciate it. He was over in Vietnam. He was carpet bombing Vietnamese villages and killing family and children for no reason. I don't appreciate that. So this guy is not a war hero. And America needs to get that out of their minds. You know, this guy is not a war hero.
I agree with you 100%. And frankly, I think we can stop with the business of every time we say John McCain, we have to say, and he served honorably. And, you know, we got the memo. Can we stop saying that now? Can we stop reinforcing that, please?
Well, I've got news for everybody and the Republicans and everybody else and Barack Obama that keeps saying John McCain served honorably. Well, a lot of these people that are over in Iraq now serve honorably. A lot of the people that are dead from going over to Iraq and an invasion that we had no business going into, served honorably. How often do you hear him talk about those people? And what really made me sick is today on right-wing radio, sometimes you can't help getting it here in San Diego in the morning. If you want to like hear like actual what's going on, traffic and stuff, you've got to turn it on.
Oh, sure. I know. You're a captive. Yeah. Liberals are a captive audience. Yeah.
They're talking about how... Yeah, how dare Obama talk about veterans not being taken care of. The Bush administration is taking care of veterans quite well. And yet, you know, you have veterans coming back, arms, legs, heads blown off. The number one injury of veterans is brain injury. And back in 2006, the Bush administration in the 2006 budget, I think, cut the funding almost in half for brain injury studies at the Brain Injury Institute for veterans coming back. So all everything that comes out of these Republicans' mouths is absolute garbage.
The Republican Party is best visualized if one thinks of maggots crawling off a corpse, because everything that comes from them comes from death and destruction and decay and rot and vileness and evil and filth. That's the nature. That's what you sign on for when you register as a Republican. That's what you're down with.
Absolutely. And now they're going to play up this Russia thing even more. And I want to see Obama and Biden make a turnaround or at least explain themselves. That's what I wrote about today. Disturbing things I'm seeing in speeches from Biden and a couple of things that Obama said last night. Perpetuating this myth that Russia invaded Georgia. That's just not how it happened.
It's not factual.
We're not getting the correct information out. And you can expect this from the Republicans, but why from the Democrats? And the fact of the matter is, and it's pretty sad, like I wrote today, too, by the way, the reality of the situation has to be pointed out by Putin in Russia. Putin, you know, a Russian guy who Russia, Soviet Union, very questionable with a lot of their techniques, has to point out that this was done for political purposes. He said it was probably done for political purposes to help one of the candidates in the American election. And sure enough, it was, because if you look back to the 2002 election, what got the knuckle-dragging dumbasses, keep the queers from marrying and save those frozen embryo people voting? Fear of Al-Qaeda and bin Laden. What happened in 2004 to convince the dumb bastards to re-elect George Bush? Why it was...
John Kerry's going to get your Bible.
Yeah, John Kerry's going to get your Bible, but weapons of mass destruction, Saddam Hussein, Saddam...
Scary, scary stuff. Yes, I know.
Right. Then 2006, what did we have? Well, Saddam Hussein wasn't working anymore. Iraq, people were getting tired of that. Bin Laden, well, I don't think about Bin Laden that much. So in 2006, during the primaries, the congressional primaries, that's when they started up with the Iran boogeyman. Iran, weapons of mass destruction. They're developing nuclear weapons. This has been going... See, a lot of people don't realize this has been going on with the stick poking at Iran for 2 years now, since 2006.
Well, it's been going on since dumb leader declared Iran to be a member of the tricycle of evil back in his first year.
Well, yeah, it started with that, but it really started going heavy during the 2006 elections, because that was the next fear Trump card they needed. That isn't working. People aren't, you know, pulling their hair out and all worried and barricading down because we're going to get blown up by Iran. So what do they need for this election? There's nothing, absolutely nothing John McCain could run on that was positive. He's like a mirror image, only a little bit stupider than Bush and a little bit more insane, if that's ever possible, than Bush. But he's going to carry on the same policies. There was nothing this guy could run on. So what do? We send Karl Rove over to Georgia. We send people from Dick Cheney's staff over there. We have military consultants over there a couple of months before this actually happened in Georgia. We have troops on the ground in that South area, and we create another Pearl Harbor. Now, I know this just by reading, looking, researching. I figured it out. Certainly Joe Biden and Barack Obama and everyone that's a sitting senator knows this. So my question to them would be, you know, if I ever got to interview them or talk to them, why do you keep perpetuating this myth? If we're going to have change, you know, this grand, wonderful speech last night, I couldn't tell if I was watching the Grammys or I was watching the Democrat National Convention or not, but yeah, I got into it and I got into the speech and I wanted to jump right in with him. But then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, why are we not telling the truth? Why are we not doing a Dennis Kucinich? Why, at least if you just, if you can't come out and it's not politically good to say that, okay, well, George W. Bush is a war criminal and we're going to prosecute him. If you can't come out and say that, at least tell the truth about what happened over there in Russia. You can say, okay, we know for a fact that the Bush administration had their people over there. We know for a fact that international watchdog groups that watch human rights abuses have documented abuse by the Georgia government to the Georgia people. We know all that. We know Georgia attacked that area first, and Russia came in defense. Now, we're not excusing Russia, but this is what happened in America. That's what I expect the Democrats to do. And I don't know if you agree with me or anybody else in the chat or anybody that's listening, but, you know, if you want me to believe you're going to change this government, give me all the promises that you promised on your speech and your acceptance speech last night, then start acting like it. Start telling the truth. Because that's where the first change is going to have to start. This Palin woman, forget it. She'll lie through her teeth. McCain.
Yeah, and by the way, it turns out she has an uncle who has a longtime companion or a long-term roommate.
Well, yeah, that's the way with these son of a bitches, okay? Every damn homophobe I know, every politician, look at how they come out of the woodwork. Every time they say, they're against homosexuals, we don't believe in same-sex marriages, and Jesus said, don't sleep with a man. Somewhere
actually,
in their closet, they got something. You know, they're somewhere, they got it in their family, or they're in a airport restroom, tapping their foot on the floor, trying to get a little fun away from the wife. Yeah, these are phony bastards. And homophobia actually technically means fear of the same.
You know,
fear of the same.
Right, exactly. Homophobia is, in a way, it should just be homo sapiens phobia, because there's no way to differentiate unless you're willing to go and peer inside somebody's bedroom. That's why I so often describe them, Philip, right wingers and Republicans and Christo fascists and knuckle draggers, mouth breathers in general. That's why I describe them as these people, these people who are more concerned with what goes on when the light goes off than they are with anything else in the country.
Oh, absolutely, and it's with every issue with these people, and I'll corner them on that. I'll make them tell me where. Tell me where in the Bible Jesus said anything about homosexuality.
No, not a word. Not a peep. Not a peep. Even suggested that some men ought to go out and castrate themselves.
Well, yeah, eunuchs. That's what he was
talking
about, eunuchs.
Yeah.
And I won't get into Bible study here, but the point is, you know, you can't talk to these people. They're brain dead. Their head is cheese.
Well, yeah, but the other thing, Philip, the other thing is that, yeah, a lot of them are brain dead. That is absolutely true. However, when you're talking about the fundies, what you are talking about are bigots, okay? You may not have heard me put this idea forward before, but when you hear some right-winger saying, I'm not, evolution's just a theory. Evolution ain't real. Blah, 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 all that crap. That is a manifestation of traditional, typical, white, racist bigotry, okay? Because if you acknowledge evolution, you are compelled to acknowledge that the human species arose in Africa. And the next thing you know, you might be kinfolks.
Oh, my God, I might have some luck in me. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah, and that's right. Yeah.
And so when all this stuff that they use that makes them so dumb, damn dumb and ignorant, it's a shield. That's all it is. It's a shield. There's no reality to it. The business about, I believe marriage should be between a man and a woe man. Is a shield for their essential fears and terrors and prejudices and bigotries. Because 99% of this crap comes out of the mouths of white people. And as a consequence...
good part of it's white people, but we get it here, too, in Southern California, from the Mexican-American community, too, because their mind is twisted with their Pentecostal...
stuff, and, you know, what, let's see, what was it, 1529 is when the Roman Catholic Church got hold of the Mesoamerican mind. And a lot of harm can be done in 580 years.
Oh, absolutely. And they're not only bigots, they're hypocrites, too, because when I talk to them, the ones that are, like, anti-abortion and have to save the frozen embryo, I ask them, well, you know, what are you thinking? And matter of fact, I had a conversation with a neighbor who's one of these people the other day, and I asked her, you know, she's talking to me about, well, I want to go with a candidate that's pro-life. I'm like, okay, so you're against abortion, right? Yes. Okay, did you know that just recently last week our troops that really have nothing really to do in Afghanistan carpet bombed a little village and killed 60 children in their sleep? Now, do you think Jesus would approve of us going ahead and the president that approves of sending the military in harm's way off to bomb another village of sleeping children and killing 60 of them? Oh, well, that's different. I'm like, how is that different? Well, it's different. So, in other words, okay, to hell with anything that's alive and breathing and has a brain, you know, but let's save these little kidney bean little things in the woman's body because every life is sacred. Well, if every life's sacred, then those 60 kids, I don't give a goddamn if they're from Afghanistan or from here or where they are, what their ethnic background is. If every life is sacred, then those 60 children that got killed in Afghanistan, their lives were sacred.
Bingo. And you prove my point, Philip. They don't care about brown babies. They don't care about Asian babies. They don't care about Arabic, Middle Eastern. White babies is what the... when they go and picket an abortion clinic or something, they're worried about white babies. There are deep Freudian ties between the white nation movement, the Aryan nation movement, all of that, you know, white supremacy, all of that. It goes to the very heart of the so-called pro-life movement. Remember the snowflake babies, Philip? You know, we spent a considerable chunk of your money, my money, and the money of all the people listening to this program on a PR campaign to encourage people to adopt snowflake babies under the Bush administration.
Well, you know, that really killed me. Adopt the snowflake babies, but meanwhile, there's all kinds of children and people.
But guess who can afford to go and...
Live children do.
Yeah, but guess who can afford to go and have embryos frozen? White couples.
Yes, of course.
You know, this is the anniversary. This is the anniversary. Three long, tormented years. This is the anniversary of Katrina, and another hurricane has drawn a bead on the Gulf Coast even as we speak. And I cannot pass this anniversary every year without thinking about that right-wing, hateful, bigoted, prejudiced, filthy woman and her filthy husband who commandeered precious rescue resources that had been sent by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to New Orleans, and they commandeered that boat and took that boat past people who were dying, past people who were drowning, past old ladies in attics who would later roast and die, took that boat past all that to get to a hospital to rescue their frozen embryos. I will never forget that.
Bastards, man. Well, I can't forget it either because I actually lived in New Orleans at one time. And I know the 9th District, and I know what this was. These son of a bitches in the Bush crime family, for them, this was an ethnic cleansing down there. It was just too black for them. They let this hurricane happen. But you tell people this, and they still, to this day, some people are getting it, but a lot of people aren't. Oh, no, that just couldn't happen. And it's... No, not possible. No, they couldn't have let 9/11 happen. They couldn't have let New Orleans happen. And people are still in denial about that. And it just seems to me that everything this administration has touched has been death, destruction.
Right. Because that's what they specialize in. Philip, they specialize in it. It's their stock in trade. Death and destruction are what Repiglicans do.
Well, it's what fascists do. And I encourage everybody to go ahead and Google, or you can go on my blog. And
yeah, give the address, please.
Yeah, it's PRACUEL.livejournal.com. And I linked it on today's piece as well. Look at the 14 common threads of fascism. It's called the 14...
The 14 defining characteristics of fascism, yes.
Take a look at them. Look at them real careful and think about how that fits in not only to the Bush crime family and what they've done and the McCain-Palin ticket, but also look at some of the things that has to do with, like, Joe Biden and Barack Obama to identify some things with that. And I know that's a very unpopular thing to say, especially after the convention, but long ago I lost my ability to just wave the Democrat flag and decide that no matter if it has a D on it, I'm going to be like Randy Rhodes and support it. I'm questioning some things because to me, Bob, it's very patriotic to question and to ask things of candidates. Speeches are good, platitudes are good, but I'd like to ask questions. And my big question, like I said before, is I want to know why they're running the spin on this Russia thing and not telling the truth.
Because they got to keep it. Well, I think, you know, Vladimir Putin came right out and accused the Bush administration of ginning this up for the benefit of John McCain. And I think there's an element of truth in it. I don't think it's the cause, but I think it's a reason. And this, you know, this benefits them. If you can, it's almost as good as having a real war if you can make the American people think we're about to have a war. I think Barack Obama addressed that very clearly last night. But, the Repiglican, you got to keep the Repiglicans in office because you can't trust them Democrats with a gun.
Barack did address it well. But then when you have your vice president candidate coming out and making statements like he did during his speech, calling Russia the next big threat.
I know.
And all that crap.
Yeah, I didn't get everything I wanted out of it, but I got more that I wanted by a long shot than what I didn't. Hey, Philip, I got to roll along here. I've got a couple of lines stacked up here and want to make sure that folks get in. But I really appreciate all your thoughts, and I hope people will go over to your website and check it out.
And if you disagree with me, you can put anonymous comments on there and say, you're crazy, Philip. But
no, I don't think you're going to get a lot of those.
Well, one thing I want to say, though, so people don't think I'm saying, you know, go ahead, vote for McCain and
No.
The hell with Obama. We have to vote, no matter what we got now, we have to vote Democrat this time. And as a matter of fact, vote Democrat all the way down your ballot. It's the only way we're going to fix it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm going to differ with you there. I know of at least two races that I will not vote for the Republican, but these are West Virginia races. I will not vote for the Republican, but I, by God, will not compromise my values and vote for the Democrat.
Well, if it's one of these Democrats that are like the Republican.
John D. Rockefeller is one of them. John D. Rockefeller IV. Jay Rockefeller,
yeah.
the man who sold out the Fourth Amendment.
We've got a pretty good guy here in Bob Filner, and he's a Democrat.
He's been on the show, Philip, and I just love him to pieces.
That's our guy, and Bob, a boxer.
You're lucky to have Bob Filner. You really are.
He's a great guy.
Well, thank you.
Let's get on your
All right, and a very happy Labor Day weekend to you. Labor Day weekend to you. Hope you do something and remember all the working folks who made Labor Day and make Labor Day possible every year.
Okay, sure will.
All right, take care, Philip.
All right, take care.
Bye now. And rolling onward, I think. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yes, I have a name for Sarah Palin.
Yes.
Bizarro Tina Fey.
Ooh, yeah, she does.
See, that one works. And if I was Tina Fey, I would do. If she's not on, I don't know if she's on Saturday Night Live still. I don't think she is.
No, she's on what, 30 Rock or something, yeah.
30 Rock, yeah. Well, I would put up a YouTube video with her.
Oh, she's Tina Fey's got to come back and do a guest host turn or something just
something
to get
like
to
that.
Do this woman.
But I do want to say something about this choice, which I have to disagree with all the Democrats who are laughing about it, because I don't think a lot of people get it, Bob, and this is the truth of the matter. She has a son in Iraq, about to go to Iraq. His name is Track.
What is it with the names?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's like that Repiglick and Attorney General in Alabama. What's his name? Troy King. He's got a daughter named, like, you got to be kidding me. Something bizarre like that.
I'm breaking down to the Democrats, though, what I call the Kid Rock equation.
Okay.
Okay, and she's a runner-up of a beauty pageant, second runner-up. She's a snowmobile champion. I know a few people I can already put on the list that'll say, yep, I'm voting for her. because of those things alone. And people say, well, wait a minute, doesn't it experience? No, you have to understand the mindset of the American public. If you keep on talking and you're extremely intelligent and you have a laser beam focus on the issues, they get insecure and they go, I want someone who speaks simpler.
I've come up with a name for her too. These things just come and they just happen and stuff. In light of the fact that she has antediluvian views, the fact that she as a woman doesn't believe that she has the right to control her own insides.
Yeah.
In light of the fact that she believes that we can drill our way to success and prosperity. In light of the fact that she believes that pick one, the whole right-wing credo. Well, she believes that it's really cool to turn hunters loose in helicopters to go shoot wolves. These are all sort of old, antiquated, backwards views. So how about Sarah Palinolithic?
Sarah Palinolithic.
Palinolithic. Get it? Yeah. Paleolithic, caveman.
Yeah, I get it. That works. There's a few nicknames. You could do the AKA, AKA. There's also the issue with the bears. I don't know if you saw this photo. There's a photo of her. It's one of those little coded messages that they send of her standing behind a huge giant bear, a stuffed bear, bear rug right behind her. And it was probably an endangered bear, so you could probably call her Sarah the Bear Impaler.
No, wait a minute. Wait, I don't have to do that anymore.
What is that?
I don't have to do. I don't have to. No. Wait a minute. There we go.
Oh.
You got your own rim shot there.
Oh, okay. I couldn't hear it on here. All right. In light of whenever you decide to go to break, I think you know what song you can play.
I've already got one picked. Based on Sarah Palinolithic, but give me the next one.
The AOR classic Sarah.
Okay. There's another one too, but I got one to go with Sarah Palinolithic. So sit back and enjoy, because it's from one of my favorite. It's from one of my favorite obscure bands.
I want to point to people that. They need to realize that the days of the Clintons and wanting the intelligent people and the Kennedys, those days are, we're going to have to go on surface a lot of times.
We have entered the era of political deal or no deal.
Political deal or no deal.
And Howie Mandel is the Karl Rove to the nation. I'll be doing paregoric shooters over that one.
It's the Stepford era. It's the Dawson Creek era that we're entering. Or we're entering back into that, kind of like a throwback to the 50s, only with modern clothes.
Yeah, because she's not just Tina Fey. She's also she's June Cleaver for the 21st century.
I like what someone said on the Lionel show. They said, she reminds me of the woman that you get in the picture frame when you buy it from
me. That's beautiful.
I know. Well, Bob, I don't know if you have another call, but I just thought I'd chime in with my thing. Oh, one more thing about the speech. I thought it was pretty amazing.
It was stunning, and I'm ashamed of the fact that we're not sitting here talking about it more and instead talking about this dim-witted...
As far as what Phil was saying about that, why don't they do that? Well, there's a prime reason, and that's because the defense industry is the mafia, and you bow to them. It's that simple. Otherwise, they'll find ways to move you off the ballot. They'll find ways to get rid of your promotion. It's quite simple why no one is talking about the Russia issue. I'm sure it's on a lot of people's minds. I'm sure it's on Biden's mind, but that's what you have to do when you're a leader in this era, in this year. I mean, how long do you think Dennis Kucinich would last if he was the vice president and he started talking about the defense industry?
Well, see, that's the thing. Dennis Kucinich talked about the defense industry, and you saw what the for-profit media
exactly.
did to him right off the bat.
Exactly. If they ever snuck around that, and, you know, if they ever snuck around that, they would find a way to take out Dennis because profit, and we're just an obstacle that we're just sitting there, and they just say, you know what?
We're inconveniently necessary.
Yeah, we're inconveniently necessary. We're the inconvenient truth.
Indeed. David, thanks a lot, man.
All right, bye.
Talk to you later. Bye now. God, you guys are good. Here's another one. Sarah, nominating Sarah Palin so easy a caveman could do her. God. It's going to be difficult to stay above the fray on this. But we'll be back in a couple of minutes. A little musical interlude for you. I think we can pull up a number of songs. They've started popping into my head. You know how I feel about this band, and they have this way of being relevant and trenchant and all of that stuff. Look, join in the conversation. We didn't have a whole lot of conversation over the last week or so because of convention coverage. Jump in. Don't wait till the last 30 minutes of the program, okay? You got two more hours to get your licks in, as we like to say here in the hills and hollers. So, for heaven's sakes, please do so. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
When you go on Kevin Drips, you step right out in nature. In the forest like a primate, using chopping tools instead of hot blades. Your thumb and forefinger supposed to show you're not a wild beast. You can hear the noises at nighttime, but you don't have to keep a certain bedtime. Shades of my body.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right. I just had to hear that. Had to take a little interlude. You know how I feel about the crash test dummy. And some smart lyrics. In the days of the caveman. Gorgeous. The album was God Shuffled His Feet, and I wish they'd stuck with it, and we'd had more of their stuff. They did a little bit more, but not a lot. What are you going to do? You'll have that, though. So we will continue the conversation here in just a second. Let's see who we've got on the line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Brother Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Oh, just a fun week, hadn't it been?
I'm wore out.
I know. I've been off this week. I've been on vacation, hallelujah. So I've got to sit up and watch all this. It's been fun. Sitting watching C-SPAN, every once in a while turning over to the commercial media just to see how bad they muck it up.
And they kind of did.
They muck it up pretty good.
Yeah, they kind of did, didn't they?
I mean, you'll have speeches and you turn over and they're just over there arguing among themselves. It's like, fine, if we're going to argue, put it back on the speakers.
Well, I said that last night as we closed the programming, the coverage of the convention, Luke. Honest to God, I'll put what we did here on the horn up against anything that any for-profit multimillionaire media did.
Well, and the thing was, you had plenty of time to talk during some of the musical interludes. You know, I mean, they put plenty of those in so people weren't just one speaker right after the other. You know what I mean? So, I mean, if you wanted to listen to everybody speak and, you know, have to take a break, you know, go use the restroom, whatever, you had plenty of time. It wasn't like if you got up, you're afraid you were going to miss something. They had a little break, so you had a chance to do whatever you wanted to do.
But I just got one of those emails in, another, dear God, you know, this is just astonishing. Headline, Tom Brokaw warns Dems to lay off McCain.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Tom Brokaw, kiss my butt, okay?
If I say fine, Tom, then I want to hear you also every once in a while tell McCain to lay off of Obama.
Yeah, yeah. No, but that sword doesn't have two edges. John McCain was a POW. John McCain can't take criticism. It reminds him of his brutal Vietnamese captors any time that you tell him that his tie doesn't match his shirt.
You kind of wonder I'm sure SNL will do something down the road about him, you know, ordering a takeout or something. The guy shows up and John McCain will sit there and tell him his life story. Why were you 10 minutes late? I was in a POW camp for 5 years.
Luke, how can anybody parody that now? He's parodied himself.
I know. Before I forget, let me mention one quick little thing. And you can probably see it on YouTube this weekend. I know you don't have the premium package anymore. But you did see tonight was Mr. Maher returns to TV.
Yes, I did.
So I think he ought to be ripe and ready to go.
Hear, hear. I have a feeling. Well, I saw the little snippet that he did with Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews from the convention. And I think he's going to be primed.
Oh, yeah. It's like they've got the list of who he's supposed to have on. I'm just, curious what they don't have listed. You know what I mean? But, this thing here about a couple of things to mention real quick. Everybody remember today. Today is the day that 3 years ago we got to watch our president play air guitar while people were drowning.
Yeah, and what? McCain's birthday.
John McCain's birthday party.
Yeah, cutting cake on dry land while people were drowning.
And amazingly enough, we didn't hear anything out of John McCain then saying, Mr. President, shouldn't you be going down to New Orleans? He was having his birthday party. Can't let anything interrupt that. And on this thing with Governor Palin, one or two things they're not mentioning a whole lot. I noticed on the prime on the for-profit TV, they've mentioned it once or twice, then kind of disappeared. She's a creationist.
Yeah, that's why I just played in the days of the caveman.
I mean, she's one of these people, say, that believes that the Flintstones was a documentary.
Yep. Yep. And, that the Earth is slightly younger than the written recipe for bread.
Yeah. I say that Fred and Barney were riding on the back of that Brontosaurus. Even though those carbon dating test proves they're, 70 million years old, 70 million to some people.
Well, no, see, the devil put those isotopes in the rocks to confuse the unbelievers. No, I'm sorry, to confound the unbelievers. Yeah, we get confounded, not confused.
I'm just curious to see now, next week, if we're going to see, all of a sudden, last week, I guess it was, or it started to be the start of this week, they had all the stories talking about the fact that how many of the Republicans weren't going to Minneapolis. By the way, I've got a...
The convention may not, I'm sure you've seen this, the convention may not go to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
They're talking about, depending on what happens with Gustav, postponing it because it's going to make them look so damn bad.
Well, it's like I think you were talking about last night. Said, isn't it amazing that Dobson kept praying for rain? He's going to get it.
And what I pointed out last night, recalling the pharaonic plagues. The last plague, Almighty God, he said, whatever Pharaoh curses you with, I'm going to, you're rubber and he's glue, it's going to bounce off you and get right. And, that's what it's kind of looking like.
Well,
I don't know, if an asteroid actually hit Boulder, Colorado, we'd know. I mean, it would be, and landed smack dab right on top of Dr. Dobson. That's the message. Yeah, loud and clear. Got it.
How it is. It's one of those things I always look at this way. Jerry Falwell went before Larry Flint, so I've been told.
Exactly. Exactly. And, I love this idea. I love this idea that the Republicans might run from their own convention. Not just a few. Not just Dick Cheney. Oh, I've got to be going to Georgia now.
The statement was that Norm Coleman said the only reason he'd be there is because it was in his state. But if it wasn't in his state, he probably wouldn't go.
Yeah, if that was in Wisconsin, I wouldn't be there.
It's like, please, Al, please win, please. Just for the fact that we can turn on, just so we can turn on the pig man one morning and just absolutely hear him, just hear his blood pressure jump 20 points.
Exactly.
But, I heard your call, and I said, yes, let's call in now. I'll call in early while we still have some good time. Because, that last 15, 20 minutes, I know it gets busy there on the system.
It does, without fail.
It does.
8:30 comes around, and all six lights light right up. We're not quite highfalutin enough now to have 12 lights, but, maybe one day we will.
But
without fail, again, 8:30 will come, and all 12 lights will light up.
It happens that way.
Who am I to fiddle with the laws of the universe,
It's like I always used to say, physics works against us. Just when you need the door to stay open, it'll close. When you need it to close, it'll stay open.
I've got a buddy who cannot say the word physics without saying my old nemesis in front of it. He always refers to it as my old nemesis physics.
Well, I thought we used to kid about, we'd say cohesion and adhesion don't like each other. They seem to work together to support me.
Oh, Luke, good talking to you, brother.
You have a good, I know you don't have, but like I say, it'll probably be on YouTube over the weekend, so try to catch it if you can tonight, Mr. Marr.
I will, I'm going to try to.
Larry's got on tonight. Oh, Lord, imagine that.
Hey, kids.
Well, if I say, I just wonder if he's going to.
I haven't bought a new sweater since the Hoover administration.
Oh, Michael Moore is listed as being on tonight.
Well, that ought to be fun then. Wish I got CNN.
Start the next week's coverage is Michael Moore gets to come in and do and substitute for Larry next week. Maybe that'd be good.
Exactly. All right, Luke, we'll talk to you later, brother. Bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Can you imagine that the Republican Party might not go to its own convention because they're so humiliated over the way the Republican Party handled Katrina? What a classic. Yeah, instead of redoubling the efforts to clean up after what happened to the Gulf Coast and clean up to what happened when the levees failed and what happened to the lower Ninth Ward, they just want to disappear from it. You know what? We called on it. I'm sorry. Our convention in the indoor arena has been called on account of rain, okay? Okay, great. Sort of reminded me of something.
Some lasher.
What, from Africa to here? $1.85? That's an outrage. I told you not to take me through Australia. You know it's all ripped up. You should have come right up to Lincoln Boulevard. Where do you come with that stuff? Turn around the rear end. I want to see your license plate. I don't think your eyes are on the square. I'll attend to you later. Don't try to pull
it. Captain Spaulding.
Why, you're one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, and that's not saying much for you.
Captain Spaulding, Rittenhouse Manor is entirely at your disposal.
Well, I'm certainly grateful for this magnificent washout. A turnout. And now I'd like to say a few words. Hello? I must be going. I cannot stay. I came to say I must be going. I'm glad I came, but just the same, I must be going. La la.
For my sake, you must stay. If you should go away, you'd spoil this party. I am throwing.
I'll stay a week or two. I'll stay the summer through. But I am telling you, I must be going.
The Republican National Convention as a production number from the Marx Brothers. Minneapolis, hello. I must be going. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, boss.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm getting my energy back.
Me too. That was an exciting week.
It was an exciting week. It was an exhausting. I'm just sitting in the chair here. I can only imagine how exhausted Mark and Guy must be.
I know they had to do a lot of walking and carrying. The speech that Obama made. My computer and everything was just going kind of. I was having to go here, there, and everywhere. I'd have to go to Houston now and then. So I did see him on C-SPAN. It went in and out a little bit. But I listened to it again you replayed it this morning.
Yes.
And I got a whole lot more out of it than I did last night. I mean, and it just, I thought it was great last night, but it just blew me away today. All the things that I was noticing today.
It really does. It bears a second and a third listening, doesn't it, Juanita?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think this should be one for the books, you know, kind of like one for the classics, I guess you would call it.
It is. It's an instant classic in American political rhetoric.
Yeah, and it's like Roosevelt's speeches and John Kennedy's speeches. You know, they're just classical. And I love what he said about we don't go to change doesn't come from Washington. It comes to Washington. It was just a great, And I love the way that he criticized, criticized with faint praise.
Damned with faint praise, yes.
Yeah. I just thought it was wonderful. It was, I knew it had to be wonderful being there. Even, you know, if you had a, you know, weren't able, because I like I said, I listened to a lot of it on yours, you know, when I could, and I listened to some on C-SPAN. There was another place I got it where it was pretty good till it would go off and it was, you know, wouldn't come back on for a long time. But anyway, I left John Kerry's speech, and of course I was so glad to see Al Gore, and I thought that Hillary and Bill both—they were just magnificent, both of them.
They were, and Al, you know, Al lit it up.
Oh yeah, Al Gore, that's my man. But there were some good other good ones I can't remember. But it was really, it was wonderful. It was so exciting. And hopeful. You know, that hope. Hope.
It really does. It matters. It matters,
yes,
Juanita.
It does.
Honest to God, it does. And perhaps the reason I wasn't willing to buy into it as much early in the process is because I've been, political processes will make a profound cynic of you. And
yeah.
It has certainly done. It's certainly done so to me.
I like another thing. I like it. He said he was going to go on all programs line by line and eliminate some that aren't needed. I think we should get rid of some of the big wigs that takes the money. Because you get these programs, and the people that are like bar somebody, the people and. Most of it goes to the top. It's run on trickle down if they say so. You know, and if they decide that you shouldn't have something, they just could very well turn you down. And I just, it was just so much to it. He is really something else. He really is.
And
I thought so when I first heard him. But it's really given me a boost, I'll tell you. You know, we needed some good news.
We did, and especially waking up this morning and finding out...
about the woman, Tina Fey.
Yeah, Sarah Palin-Olific. Yeah, this really, this woman's a creationist. I don't get him. The things that you have to deny, the facts that you have to deny to be a creationist, under most circumstances, if you denied the fact set for evolution and the origin of the species and the origins of life and the origins of Earth and the origins of the universe, under anything but religious circumstances. If you denied those kind of facts, you'd get locked up as delusional. It's like the sky is purple and polka dotted today. No, it's not. You know, you're crazy. But we've got the First Amendment, and that makes you can ascribe to absolute insane things, and people look at you and go. Well, how nice for you. Well, I can't. I'm not trying to be mean to anybody, but I just can't. It's like that email I had a couple of nights ago, Juanita, from our buddy Tosh. He said, "I believe that the creation myth is an expression of the fact that the humankind exists in the same dimension, in the same spatial dimensions as the universe, because the universe is God." I went, wow, I'm going to be a few days with that one.
Well, that's kind of like Hinduism or something.
Or a number
everything,
of religions.
Everything ends up, you know, and in the Bible it says, I'm mixed up now, I think it's Jesus said, I am before Abraham.
Right.
Yeah. And the metaphysical teachings that I know about are all stem back basically from Hinduism, as I understand it. And they believe that everything is God, really. We're God. Everything is God. And,
yeah, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's a manifestation of that idea. And
that's
because
probably where that comes from.
Well, because we're so very limited, Juanita, in what we know about the origins of the books that wound up in the New Testament, I mean, nobody wrote a gospel during the time that Jesus was alive. Okay? They just didn't. We don't know what the influences were. But, we know that Buddhism had come 500 years before Jesus was born. We know that Plato and Socrates had engaged in their inquiries, and Aristotle, 300 to 500 years before Jesus was born. And some of that had to be floating around in the region. They couldn't help but influence thinking. And, the fact... Well, I think there's a lot of manifestations of that kind of thinking in Jesus' words, if you don't, assume that he is speaking literally. Because, most of it's in parables anyway, but, the fundamentalists, they went, he was literally talking, man, and that's what that meant. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the Bible is parables. And what's the other word for parable?
Allegory.
Allegory, yeah. And that some people believe may or may not have happened. That it could be happened. Could have happened, but it's all allegory.
Exactly.
And you got to believe that it can't be all literal.
Well, it would be impolite for me to ask anybody's age, but considering how long you've been on the planet, how many times have you seen the sun stand still in the sky?
Well, now, but that would be like a miracle, and I think it could happen. I mean,
the entire mechanics of the universe would stand. No, see, that's the thing, though. When you assume a sun standing still in the sky, that means that the sun revolves around the earth, and it doesn't work.
Well, no, I don't know if that.
And then in the book of 1 Kings, it defines the value of pi as being 3.0, and it just isn't. But, we're dealing with people who were baffled by wheelbarrows, so,
I read one book one time that was supposed to tell a lot about the Bible, and it said it was not a scientific book, that they were not very scientific. It was mostly Egyptians and the others.
Right. Well, look at the long list. Look at the long list of contractors that Solomon brought in to build the temple. Really? Not kidding. He had a lot of outside people come in and build the temple who actually knew how to build things.
Oh, yeah.
So, right. And by the time Herod rebuilt the temple... he had the benefits of Roman engineering, and he leveraged every last bit of it. It was a beautiful, beautiful structure, according to the ancient sources.
Who was the one rebuilt it?
Herod.
Oh, Herod. Okay, I thought you said Aaron.
No, Herod. Herod.
Yeah, that's right, King Herod.
Yeah, he gets a real bad rap for that whole beheading
and
John the Baptist thing, Dance of the Seven Veils, whatever.
That's a lot of like a contradiction, in a way, but. My faith is not based on the whole thing, but I'm not going to deny that a lot of it's true, and a lot of it's allegory. But it gets you confused a lot of times. I finally read the whole Bible. I would suffer through the begats and all like that.
And that's some begatting, and that takes some. I've done it too. And you kind of cheat a little bit, and you go six.
Appreciate that.
But you cheat a little bit, and you go three. Let's see, it's three pages. Lord of mercy, there's 12 pages of Begatten left.
I read it through. I tried not to cheat. And
I know, but, you know, you kind of just, you're just peeking. You know, how many more pages of Begatten do I have?
There's in there that I say, my God, what in the world is this? You know how they throw the women out, let them be raped, and
sure. Hey, look, you know there's Lot's daughters, and they're
there's the worst ones.
They nasty.
Somewhere else.
Yeah, they're nasty, and Noah's kids aren't exactly Warden June Cleaver's youngins either.
Well, you remember Gene Scott, don't you?
Yes.
Well, he was very intelligent guy, and he said, you know, he said there was a lot of interbreeding if they were the only ones that left on the earth because God told them be fruitful and multiply. And he said there's a lot of interbreeding going on in that case.
Sure. So, but, you know, this Sarah Palin, she's one of those people. There's Adam, there was Eve, she had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin, everything goes to hell, and you know, blah, blah, blah.
She had a conversation with a water moccasin.
Yeah, Eve had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin. You know, then she and told her
I didn't know it was a water moccasin.
Well, that's what I think it was. I mean,
it's a tree snake.
That's the meanest snake there is in the South. It had to be a water moccasin. So she has a conversation with the gossipy water moccasin, and then, you know, he convinces her to go off and have some fresh fruit, and boom, out of paradise.
Yep.
That's a heck of a note. Well, who wrote where's the manual? Where's the sign, do not eat? No! But, you know, you want to buy, yeah, but Sarah Palin, she buys into that stuff literally. Wow.
It's like I told this friend of mine that, you know, they were talking about teaching creationism in schools, and I said, whose version? Because I said the different denominations and other religions, and
yeah, because there's only about 20,000.
That they all got a different interpretation.
Yeah, there's only about 20,000 different creation myths on the planet, and there's been more, but we've winnowed them down a little bit.
So which one are you going to teach?
Me, I like the Hindu version. It's an elephant standing on the back of a turtle, standing on the back of a turtle, standing on the back of a turtle, and it's turtles all the way down. That's just real easy and elegant for me.
Well, I still do believe that we are God's creation. I don't know how it happened, you know, and I don't know enough about the science part of it to deny it. And, you know, I'm learning that just because you say that it's a theory doesn't mean it's not true.
Right. Exactly. And science says that things have to be theories until they are proven absolutely to be certain in every last instance. There are aspects of gravity that are still theoretical, but you know what? I haven't floated off the planet lately. How about you?
Well, there's coming into question about gravity that makes
well,
me
exactly,
understand
but,
it like we think we do.
But you know what? If I stand here and I drop a penny on the floor and I've got a bag of a million pennies, I'll bet you that every one of those million pennies that I drop falls to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Or falls on another penny after the pile gets good enough. So, you know, when those idiotic creationists say evolution is only a theory, you know, I just want to look at them and say, okay, well, goofball, you know, so's gravity. But I haven't seen you flying. No.
Well, can I ask you a question?
You sure can.
If you don't mind me changing the subject.
Ask anything you want.
There's something I wanted to ask you about. Guys, said he interviewed this Blue Dog Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And I must have missed the first part of it. But I understood him, I believe it was him, to say, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that you couldn't go the whole way of wind and solar. You couldn't go the whole way right off the bat. You had to go through nuclear and things like that. Did I understand him right?
I think you did.
I just wonder, were they, I would like to see that lady that you had on the other day. Is it Lurleen?
No, Lorella.
Lorella, yeah. I'd like to see her talk to him.
Oh.
I would too.
And, you know, then I chuckle a little bit, but only because when you talk to any of my friends down in the Coal River Valley, you know, they're not mean. They're highly intelligent, and they just tell you the facts how they are.
Yeah.
And no, and just yeah, that would be interesting because what they don't have these Congress critters and these blue dogs. What they don't have is they never have people standing in front of them telling them, I'm sorry, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You know, just because you were elected to, you know, being elected to Congress is not an IQ test.
Right.
You, being elected does not prove you intelligent. And, you know, that can be proven either by Democrats or Republicans. There's a
yeah.
lot of dumb Democrats and a lot of dumb and a lot more dumb Republicans.
Yeah.
But when you say, no, I'm sorry, we got to burn a lot more coal before we can ever have any windmills or solar panels, that's just how it is. God wants it that way. Nurr.
And I sent you an article where they interviewed Adam Putnam.
Yes.
My congressman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but he was talking about that there was just a few places could use the windmills in the United States. I didn't think it was that. I thought it was a lot more than just a few.
There are places that, you know, the giant industrial ones won't work, and there are places where, just like there are places where there's not persistent sunshine. But the point is that, for instance, Juanita, John Fox is a lot more up to date on this than I am. But you know, you could take a place in say Nevada that we're not doing anything with because you really can't do anything with it. And you could take that 10 square miles, 10 miles by 10 miles, 10 by 10 mile by 10 mile square, and turn that into a giant solar collection site with the solar-based steam generators and turbines. You could power the power grid of the United States off of it,
yeah.
And you could have it in 10 years. But every time we start talking about something like that, the oil industry goes, no, we can't. Well, why not? Because we can't. Because we can't just do that. I mean, we got to burn some oil first. Oh, okay. You know, like it's some sort of holy incense
to
it.
Well, why?
Right. And if you ask them, well, why, they will happily tell you that the answer to, well, why, is because they haven't figured out a way to get rich off of it yet.
Well, that's it, yeah.
Exactly. Well, Juanita, I hope you have yourself a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
Well, thank you.
And I'll be talking to you soon.
And you take care.
Sure will.
And keep up the good work. Thank you so much for your broadcast, and I'm thankful to God and to Mark.
Those were a couple of heroic efforts and performances.
I appreciated Peter's remarks too. I was bless his heart. He had that hurricane again.
It parked on top of his house.
Yeah.
It really, really did. He would have been in a spot with that little without that little inverter generator. But I'm glad you caught it all. And this stuff's all up on the archives too. So if you want to go back
like I said, I don't know if it was because I didn't have a picture and got more out of it or what, but it was. You know, it was great. It just was more great than I thought it was.
I was sitting there having a little bit of a flashback, Juanita, thinking, you know, this is like radio, because I wasn't able to watch the video of it or anything, and I had to rely on Guy James's masterful description of the scene.
Uh-huh.
And he had the little hairs on the back of my neck standing up. I didn't need to see any pictures, because I had Guy sitting there telling me all about it. Yeah,
yeah.
I love baseball and football on the radio, too. So, because I love radio, but yeah, he did a wonderful job.
Did on the radio?
Oh, gosh, yes. I sure do. Except for Mountaineer games, because then you have to listen to the commercials for the Friends of Coal.
Yeah.
Juanita, I'll talk to you soon.
You take care. Okay, bye.
Bye now. Rolling onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston.
Well, I wanted to give you another report.
Yes, please.
If I may. I was so diverted, though, by what you were just talking about with Juanita. And that was Juanita, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that she brought up the transcendentalists, Emerson and Thoreau and figures like that. They influenced the world. Gandhi read a lot of their work, and he actually thanked the American people for creating Thoreau. And, you know, he sees people as part of a larger collective and how we influence each other. And there's something about the American spirit of that day that helped to create Thoreau. And Gandhi learned a lot from it and was thankful for it. And, of course, King picked it up from Gandhi. And I think Thoreau picked up a lot of this stuff from Hafiz, another Sufi poet from Persia.
Mm-hmm. The Sufis are the profoundly mystical arm of Islam.
Yep.
And so that's not at all surprising. And, you know, in many ways, I think Barack Obama picked up some of the torch last night.
I agree. With a couple of exceptions, though.
Right. And I had a, if you don't mind me using a little bit of our conversation to answer a question, I had a message in here from the chat room asking me what I thought about Obama's reference to clean coal.
Right.
And, you know, the more I've thought about it, the less upset I get. And I hope my friends down at Coal River Mountain Watch won't get upset with me for saying this, because I can follow it up.
Yeah.
He used that phrase, those two little words, were sufficient to literally pick the pocket of John McCain. Because had he come out and said, oh, you know, we're not going to ever burn any more, no more coal, got to end it tomorrow, all of that, which I would like to hear, and I would like to see us take affirmative steps towards stopping the burning of coal.
Uh-huh.
Had he said that, then the coal industry would have just pumped untold millions into the McCain campaign.
Yep.
But by putting those two little words in there, suddenly he's picked McCain's pocket. And
he hasn't put the coal industry completely on the defensive.
Right. And finally, when somebody like Barack Obama references clean coal, and perhaps I'm rationalizing here, but if he says, okay, well, you know, we're going to consider clean coal, show me the clean coal, and somebody comes in and says, hey, look here, Barack, it's clean coal. You know, where'd you get it? Oh, well, Kaford Mountain. Oh, let me see this Kaford Mountain. You got it from there? Oh, damn, I thought you were bringing me clean coal. That's just damn dirty old coal again. Get out of here.
Yep. So, yeah, it's complex, and there are a lot of rhetorical, you know, strategizing going on and stuff like that, and the threat of big money coming down on your head and so on and so forth. I noticed the clean coal bus around the streets of downtown Denver this week.
A clean coal bus?
Yeah, some big, you know, marketing type deal.
It wasn't like where they buy a billboard on public transport or something. This was something different?
Yeah, it was an actual bus. Their traveling bus. You know, like the C-SPAN bus? You know, it's like
sure.
Their own Greyhound with their
yeah.
You know, stuff on the outside. You know, a good form of marketing in that case, you know. Good groups need to do that kind of public relations, and the clean coal industry was utilizing, you know, a bus as well to do theirs. It was moving at the time. I was going in a different direction, so I don't know if it parked somewhere and then opened itself up to give, like, little, people come into the bus and look at the wonders of clean coal, or I don't know how involved it was or interactive, but it was out there rolling around. I didn't know their TV advertising as much. I know they sponsored the Democrat debates. But anyway, yeah, again, can a Barack administration be pushed on the issue of coal and how we define clean coal? If the streams are still functioning, okay, that's a check towards being clean. If the air is still, you know, clear, great. If our lungs are clear, great. You know, that's a problem with how Gore talks about the environment. I mean, he's, I think, too much, you know, CO2 is a huge issue, but it's part of the problem. There are these other parts. that I wish he and Obama would talk about. I mean, imagine if they did say something or felt free to say something like, you know, instead we're going to look at clean coal, but we're also going to stop blowing up our mountains in West Virginia and Kentucky and in other people's mountains in Colombia. You know, there's that limit. You can't quite say that, not yet. But as he said earlier, change doesn't come from Washington. It goes to Washington.
Yes.
That's for us to move on. So that speech encouraged activism. You know, that's a very radical thing to do. And those were the great parts of the speech. I wonder, did he write that? Or I'm sure he has assistants. Or do you
know that brilliant speech that he delivered back in 2004 as the keynote at the convention then? Wrote every word of it.
Really? Okay.
And I have no doubt that these were his words as well. Because, you know, when you study speech and when you watch someone deliver a speech, you can tell when they're your own words because they come out of your mouth like your own words.
Yeah.
And to me, those words were coming out like his own words. And I didn't have the sense that, because every time you watch George try to deliver a speech, you know that he has not, you know, he didn't even put the period at the end of the final sentence. He didn't even draw -30- at the bottom of it.
Okay.
Just because he's so awkward in trying to deliver it.
Yeah.
And even Reagan, you could tell, well, he was a bad actor. And as a consequence of Reagan being a bad actor, you could tell when he was working off a script.
Right. Yeah, it was very moving in so many ways the whole week. I thought Hillary Clinton was great and Bill. The delegates, you know, C-SPAN did a lot of great coverage. Of course, the head on radio network did great work. The protests went off very well, and I had the privilege of attending the Sunday one and part of the one on Thursday that involved the Iraq Veterans Against the War and others.
I had thought that would be interesting.
Yeah, and they made a real effort. The electronic corporate media made a huge effort to kind of disappear that. Earlier in the day, the radio news people who were like doing the traffic, you know, it was so big. It was disrupting traffic, and they made their own estimates of 10,000 to 12,000 people being at it. And
never so much as a blip on the radar from the for-profit media on that, though, was there, Preston?
Not much. And while there was a mention of it, there was some in the Rocky Mountain News. The estimate all of a sudden dropped to 3,500, and also how it was photographed. You didn't see this sea of people that was there. Instead, you did see the veterans. I mean, they couldn't completely ignore it because the veterans were there, and they were marching, and they were singing songs and, delivering this letter to Obama about pulling out of those countries and reparations for the Iraqis and the Afghanis. So you saw them, but again, you didn't see this large body of people behind them. And, you know, in fact, the estimates, Rage Against the Machine played a concert along with Flowbots, a local Denver hip-hop band that's very good, doing very exciting work. Also, there's somebody else there, I forget who. But anyway, that itself attracted 7,000 people, and just about all of them went from there to this march, which was 3,000 other people, including the veterans, and then people joined it along as it went. That's what I did. I joined it towards when it finally got to downtown. And it was moving in so many ways. Yeah, fantastic. And it was a shame that, you know, so many people didn't get to see it on the mainstream media, but, you know, Democracy Now! Did some coverage, and you know, the cops were great in many ways. Certainly there were a few that, you know, got swept up in that authoritarian energy. But others were cool about it. You know, in fact, we've got like a Black Police Officers Caucus here. And I remember they invited Al Sharpton to speak to their conference. We've got a Latin American Officers Caucus. You know, we've got a union. And I think we've got a lot of people just in the community doing outreach to police officers and not calling them pigs. And
did you hear Guy James's police officer story last night, Preston?
No, I didn't.
He was leaving the convention hall on Wednesday evening. You know, nothing fancy. Just walking to or walking from. Minding his own business on the public sidewalk. One of these troop carriers with all these black-clad officers, you know, no badge, no name, faces effectively masked by helmets and face guards.
Yeah.
And he just takes a picture of the truck going by. And the truck squalls to a stop.
Jeez.
And a bunch of the officers, you know, get down on the jump rail. And this guy comes up and says, "You can't do that."
Oh, God.
And guy said, "I can't do what? You can't take pictures. They might know how many of us there are and where we're going." And I guess guy was feeling his oats a little bit and said, "Why don't you just get back on your truck? I can take a picture. This is still America. I'm on the public sidewalk. And you're wrong."
Well, what happened?
And the guy turned around, walked away, and realized that he wasn't going to intimidate guy.
Good.
And the truck drove away. Then, you know, a little golf clap for Guy James, you know, standing up for First Amendment rights.
Yep. So sorry to hear about that. That's interesting. Again, some did certainly get swept up in that authoritarian energy that's created by all these.
Well, you've seen the video by now, I'm sure, Preston, of the woman doing nothing and getting batoned to the ground by the officer. I'm
Code
sure.
Pink.
Yeah.
I think Forrest is her name. And, but see, there the print media did a decent job. I was able to read something about her. I think it was the Rocky Mountain News or the Denver Post. And, she's like, you know, I'm going to keep at it and I'm going to be at Minneapolis and, or St. Paul. And, hopefully, you know, a lawsuit will come and she'll get a payment and she can, you know, donate it to causes or whatever. Take, you know, have more free time for herself to get involved, do this good work that she's doing. You know, we'll see. I'll let you know if a lawsuit develops from that.
I don't see how it can't.
Yeah.
Because just watching the video, you can see that they're screaming, get back, get away from the vehicle. The vehicle, of course, is a golf cart. And she's nowhere near it. And they just come up, and the guy's got his baton in both hands, held horizontally, and just jams it into her breasts and knocks her to the ground.
Yeah.
She had to be black and blue from that.
It was horrible, definitely. You know, and thankfully there was so much media there. You know, that got out, I guess, on YouTube and a whole bunch of places. So she has, you know, public support behind her. So, but again, other moments, you know, that didn't make it to YouTube so often were the moments where, you know, the police were genuinely helpful and reasonable, were open to dialogue. You know, I know some people who work with like Cop Watch, an organization like that, that records and reports on all sorts of police abuses. And it's a huge issue. It's not just at these events, but across the country. You know, every 6 months or so, a case will make it into the paper, like Amadou Diallo being shot so many times. But there's
Abner Louima, yeah.
There's stuff like that going on every week, though. And, you know.
Yeah, this is, and that's very much worth driving home a little bit, Preston. These, although the focus was on Denver and there was an aggregation, a coming together of protesters and so forth, the same kind of conduct that was displayed toward the woman from Code Pink is displayed to various and sundry Americans every
day of every year somewhere in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And much, much, much worse. There's a lot of sexual violence going on. And these sorts of jobs kind of lend themselves to major abuses, like, you know, border agent jobs and police jobs and being in the military. These are hierarchical, authoritarian structures using force oftentimes, or at least detaining people, putting them in cages, whatever, fining them, so on and so forth. When you make other sorts of investments, like in teachers and professors and, you know, clean water workers and forest rangers and so forth, they don't lend themselves to that sort of, you know, a big government or tyranny. And so it's a shame. People are driven financially desperate, and they get careers as police officers. And, you know, so our military, you know, that's another thing about an Obama administration. They're saying already they're going to increase the size of the military. That's a huge problem.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, toward what end?
Getting Osama in his cave. Please. Enough of that.
Yeah, well, but you got to admit, if you're trying to bring undecideds, whoever those people are, or middle of the roaders, whoever those people are, if you're trying to bring those people over, neutralizing John McCain's "I'll follow him to the gates of hell," that hyperbole, at least pointing out that John McCain won't follow him to his cave, is very politically effective.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're not saying that you will follow him to the cave. You're saying John McCain's telling you he'll go to hell, but he won't even go to the cave.
Yeah, I concede that point. I just want to add this other point, I guess. You know, I hope that if it goes beyond rhetoric, then it becomes a larger problem. You know, I think other people need to talk about other approaches to neutralizing Osama. Let's say he's being used as a metaphor for militant attacks on this country, which are real, and the threat of it happening again is very real. But again, how do we actually neutralize it? One way is to increase the military in some people's minds, but I think to put further into people's heads other approaches. Three cups of tea. I don't know if you've heard that book, but there's a guy who's building schools in Afghanistan and doing a lot of good work like that. Work we've done in the past. You know, we used to build these universities in other countries, like the American University in Egypt, and there's one in Beirut. And, you know, certainly there are people with regressive agendas within these universities, but oftentimes the indigenous populations were able to utilize it and conform it to their own needs. And it built a lot of goodwill between nations. We can do a lot more of that stuff again. So,
and it pays off a lot better than bullets.
Yes, it does.
It just
the bullet salespeople, they've got a lot of power still, and a loud voice. So, I don't know. You know, another way we could save oil, though, we're talking about conservation and not burning so much, and, you know, batteries in the cars and all sorts of options, but it's another reason to end the empire. I think our military takes up, like, some phenomenal amount, like 30% of our energy use goes to the military.
Sure, that's why Rockefeller and Ray Hall and Byrd and Mollahan and the entire West Virginia congressional delegation are ramrodding this coal to liquids boondoggle.
Yeah.
The first person they went to on this was the military, and I think I've mentioned the big, Nanette can tell us the story better, but they went to a protest of this big hullabaloo had at a resort near Beckley, and you couldn't, it was by invitation only. And it was our congressional delegation and a whole bunch of brass from the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And the hustle was, we're going to fly our jets on liquid coal. And the generals were sitting there going, yes, yes, we are.
Yeah, it's, I mean, talk about another war. It's kind of like an undeclared war on nature going on. And to operate one of those aircraft carriers for a day takes something like 100,000 gallons of fuel. And, we, you know, that we park them a few miles off the coast of Iran, we don't need to. They are weapons of mass destruction. And even if we don't fire them, just setting them there, the threat of the use of force is also the official definition of terrorism. And at some point, we probably will use the force if, again,
and that's one of the things that was that's one of the things that was disturbing to me out of Robert Wexler's speech at the convention. You know, he came out and sounded like he wanted bring me an Iranian and I'll kill him in front of all of y'all. Arr!
Yeah, put his head on a pike.
Yeah, and it was just embarrassing and it was horrifying. And out of this business with the mention of Iran, those were the downsides of Obama's speech for me.
Yeah, and I missed the Wexler.
Politically, and I hate that I say this kind of stuff because I was truly inspired by the more optimistic, the yes we can part of the speech. But politically, how can he not do the, how can he not say those things, Preston?
Well. I'll have to think about that. I'm not sure how to respond to that. Maybe he can't.
Because he's been beaten. He's already been worn out. He's been absolutely worn out and was hard-pressed to respond to it by all these men. Well, you know, John McCain's far more of a foreign policy expert than Barack Obama could ever be. John McCain's not a foreign policy expert.
Right.
John McCain... What? And you know what? Wes Clark was right. Getting shot down does not make you a foreign policy expert any more than it makes you qualified to be president.
That's right. That's right. You know, I think Wexler and others would be more apt to say something more progressive if their constituents really are open to saying more things, more progressive. Again, how does change go to Washington? It's the people outside Washington, you know, who make the change in so many ways. Well, I think Gandhi, be the change you wish to see in the world. I think that was Gandhi.
Yes.
And Obama picked that up. Definitely. That's exactly one of the things he picked up on. He said, well, change, and, we are the change we've been looking for or something like that. So yeah, he has picked up on those traditions. But, you know, the delegates themselves were doing a lot of creative things. You know, there are all these restrictions on what kind of sign you can take in, and there's coordination of, you know, signage and which sign to be held up when. And again, I understand that kind of theater going on. But people, you know, it'd be fun if they could do their own thing as well. And one thing they decided to do, some wore like a button. It was like a square button. And it was pink, so I think it was kind of nodding the hat to code pink. And it said, delegate for peace. And so they could stop this particular kind of sign, but they picked these buttons. And I saw that kind of information work going on and advocacy work through these symbols. I actually have a bumper sticker that's called, that says, God is other people. That I liked a lot, but
I've seen, yeah. It's a play on what Sartre, hell is other people.
Yeah, that's right. It's a response or a different perspective. Shepard Fairey. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's at this point internationally renowned graphic designer and artist who he's done a lot of different sort of work, but you know, professional type work and then his artistry. You may have seen this figure with like Andre the Giant's head and it says obey.
Yes.
Above, that's Shepard Fairey. And he has a huge catalog, very creative stuff like that. He did a art gallery, something Obama art or something like that. Wonderful stuff. Great stuff. So that was another thing that was going on here that maybe was underreported or, you know, easy to miss, I guess, in some ways. I think the print media did do a decent job. They treated even the protesters pretty fairly, not always, but in some instances. And there's something else I was going to mention about art gallery. We had spoken about Al Jazeera coming here, and I don't know if they ended up in that the Grizzly Rose. They may have. I don't know. I was watching Link TV, and Link TV has this program called Mosaic, and they give bit segments of broadcasts for throughout the Middle East. They had an Al Jazeera broadcast. They interviewed a lady. They're here in Denver, and they interviewed a woman from the Colfax Community Network. And Colfax is lives about four blocks from there. It's one of the main.
It's the main drag of Denver, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it was just fascinating to me. Here I was watching Link TV, Al Jazeera, and they're giving me the most intimate, useful story. One of the most useful ones.
That's something I kept saying is that the real, the real convention news, you want the speeches, you want all of that stuff, but the real convention news was happening outside the official venue.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the official venue didn't want those people in it.
Yeah, and some of the other media talking about the news, it's like they talk for hours, and it's like they hardly say anything. Or they say the same thing over and over and over and over again. Same focus, same players. It's ridiculous. It's like they talk about politics without talking about politics. But another thing about the Colfax, the Al Jazeera report, Colfax Community Network is a great organization, and they work to get homeless people into motels and work out temporary housing. And they interviewed a worker there, and she was like, we can make a dollar go worth $10. And then they interviewed a resident, like a homeless guy, who was living in this motel part-time, and they were like, what do you think of the convention? And he says, well, people got to understand, the president isn't in charge. It's the corporate powers that are heading this country. People got to understand that. So, again, within the same report, which was so interesting already, there's this radical insight from the guy on the street. And I thought that was a powerful moment as well. But, more than worker powers, there is also the people power, and
I'll be interested to see how much of that people power is on display in Minneapolis.
Yep.
Because with a lot, and I understand ours is not a party that is without fault by any stretch of the imagination, but. While the Democrats have been enablers, especially for the last 2 years,
mm-hmm.
They have done so cynically and politically. I'm curious to see if there will be as much protest in Minneapolis,
yeah.
Because those really are the dirty, bloodthirsty SOBs, self-made, who started all this.
Yeah, yeah. It will be very interesting to see, and we'll have to dig around to find coverage of it. If there is, I did see something briefly on Current TV, a short interview with some organizers working there.
I know the ACLU is bringing a scale model individual Gitmo concentration camp cell to Minneapolis.
That was here. Amnesty International took out a great sign actually on Colfax, and it said close Guantanamo, end torture, something else, Amnesty International.
And on the first day, wasn't there a simulated waterboarding? I saw some reporting on that, and that had to be powerful.
Yeah, there was a lot of great kind of booths and street theater going on. A lot of creative stuff for sure. But on St. Paul, Minneapolis, just today I got my issue of the Progressive, opened it up, big full-page ad right inside the paper, SCIU presents Take Back Labor Day Festival. Harriet Island, St. Paul, Minnesota, September 1st.
And I've mentioned that briefly. One of our listeners who lives up that way in the chat room named Broadus had brought that to my attention, and I think that's going to be profound.
Yep.
Because this is, you know, this is Labor Day weekend, and I can't get through this program without referencing the Katrina anniversary, because that truly is, along with the war against and occupation of Iraq, that is our greatest national shame to date.
And it looks like we might have a Katrina again. Who knows? But it looks like we're kind of getting a blowback. You know, we're warring against nature, and nature's kind of, there's a blowback coming from that, it appears. And we need to homeland security in a real way and in a variety of ways, not another aircraft carrier. More like, takebacklaborday.com if people want to at least visit their website. And labor is very much involved with this green movement, the green collar jobs movement. You know, these are the service people we need. This is the army that needs to be expanded. So I imagine this festival will, you know, in some way or another, make its presence known.
Now, is this festival also associated with the Rage Against the Machine concert that's going to go on up in Minneapolis as well?
I don't know. It does say in the ad that Tom Morello will be there, Tom Morello and friends. So I don't know if Zach will be there and other members of Rage Against the Machine. Tom may, I don't know. But it's also going to include Steve Earle, Allison Moore, Mos Def, and they're going to have a...
Well, yeah, Steve Earle is actually supposed to play with Rage Against the Machine, and I would crawl across ground glass to hear that.
I lucked out one day, and I saw Rage Against the Machine at Red Rocks about 7 years ago. And it's a long story, but me and a friend of mine basically were standing behind the band a few feet back, and our view was kind of looking out towards the crowd. And it was an amazing thing to see the energy of this force. This art was just amazing, and it was like a ritual kind of primal energy going on, and a useful one. And I think it was the song Freedom. There's kind of this peaking point of it, and then it hits this point, and then the crowd just exploded. And other artists actually like Flea of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, he's used to rocking the house, but he said he had never, he's never in his life seen anything like an audience reaction to Rage Against the Machine. And yeah, that's what I saw. It was amazing. And anyway, the activism that they're doing, actually, Zach was also at the head of that march, with the veterans. And again, they had those releases for inappropriate anger, and they have those releases for, you know, just cries of freedom. And then they channeled it towards this completely disciplined, nonviolent march with all these great signs, and it was, and people doing their own networking within these gatherings. It was good. It was real good. So anyway, that's the report from Denver, and I'm curious to hear the other callers are thinking about tonight. So
okay, well, great, Preston. I really appreciate it, and thanks for keeping your eyes out and giving us a little bit more of the alternative of what was going on, because there was a lot of talk about, you know, that ABC camera crew got busted for trying to take pictures of
corporate soiree or whatever.
Yeah, the people coming in and out of the corporate soiree. There was the big AT&T party. Isn't that funny? AT&T party. Sort of in, yeah, it's a tea party in reverse. Hey, get that tea back onto the boat.
Yeah.
And then lots of people coming in and going out. I think it was Matt Stoller from Open Left who stood and took multiple photographs of Harold Ford. I think at that party or another one of the big corporate shindigs. But you know, there were 200 of them in Denver, and there'll be something like 300 of them in Minneapolis. And you see those things, and you really, really know what's at stake. And so, you know, I hate incrementalism, but I'm still at that place where I got to have somebody in the office who can begin to affect some change. And frankly, I think I hate talking about a president as a leader, or and I especially hate it when anybody talks about elected representatives in Congress as leaders.
Yeah.
Because, you know, actually what they are is employees.
Yeah.
But somebody's got to be in the Oval Office who can provide some degree of leadership to what has been thus far a fairly rudderless Congress.
Yeah, and I have mixed feelings about that word too. In some ways I'm critical of it. In other ways, Barack is leading. There's a positive leadership going on there, and so we can give them that at times, but there also needs to be, beyond leadership, there needs to be followership. That's something else we need.
Or not even so much followers, but. What's that verse from the New Testament? Be ye doers of the word and not hearers only.
Great. And I just to clarify, followership in terms of as it applies to elected officials, following the will of the people. You know, not leading.
Yeah, affecting. You know, it's one thing for Barack Obama to talk about change, but people have got to affect it.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a chemical agent. He's not a one man effector of change. That change only happens, you know. He said change comes to Washington, but it's got to come to small town America. It's got to come to inner city America. It's got to come to rural America. It's got to happen on our interstates and our bridges. It's got to happen in places like New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. It's got to happen in Appalachia, and in all of those places, it will be affected by the people who damned well demand it.
You know, it needs to come in our homes and in our workplaces and on our farms. We need change big time. Enough of this corporate monoculture. You know, another way to save gas, save fuel, huge way would be to cut down on the oil-based pesticides and herbicides.
Absolutely. And I saw that guy at the convention who said, his name was Barney Smith, and he was another, you know, just another screwed-over American from the Bush administration. And he said, we need, let me make sure I get the quote spot on. The guy lost his job because it was shipped overseas, and he said, we need a president who puts Barney Smith before Smith Barney.
Good.
And it turns out that and we've got another word for the pterodactyl, seeing how she's so, you know, paleolithic. Pterodactyl paleolithic. It turns out that her financial portfolio is, lo and behold, managed by, you guessed it, Smith Barney.
Yeah, we need a change in our investments. There's a fair amount of that going on. That's been an interesting movement itself, kind of the socially responsible investing movement. It's involving billions of dollars at this point. And
If I had the money to invest, I would not invest in any mutual fund that had a single iota of stock in it from Caterpillar.
Yep.
Because Caterpillar is exclusively who is used to destroy destroy the mountains here in Appalachia.
Yep, and they're destroying homes in Palestine.
Exactly.
You know, one ran over Rachel Corrie.
But, you know, the Methodist Church got a lot of grief a few months back for wanting to divest in Caterpillar, and they were doing it over Israel. And I was sitting here just, you know, bouncing my forehead off the desk going, guys, guys, look a little closer to home.
So it's, you said it's the exclusive manufacturer of the...
Oh, yeah, Caterpillar, the stupid billboards that are all over West Virginia that say, yes, coal, clean, carbon neutral coal.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't put up by Massey Energy. Those are put up by Walker Caterpillar Machinery Company. And they're this huge, you know, Caterpillar dealer to the mountaintop removal industry.
Okay.
When you've got a mountain you've got to remove, you got to have you some Caterpillar equipment.
And kind of the irony of Caterpillar, I mean, you know, a real caterpillar has a very different relationship, you know, with the natural world. It doesn't bulldoze the forest. There's a, you know, mutual
right
assistance going
and
on.
And know? And make no mistake, they make equipment that is very much useful. But the you know when they're part and parcel of the destruction of my homeland.
Yep.
Oh God, did I just use that word, Preston? Reach through the phone and slap me.
Homeland,
yeah.
Actually, in that context, in the spirit with which you said it, I think it was completely appropriate.
I just feel like I need to have a you know bar of Octagon soap shoved in my mouth every time you know, when it. Because see, it's a word they've stolen and dirtied.
Right, exactly, and a word they've co-opted again, and this time Homeland Security. These constant co-optations of words, of movements. Of you know religions and virtues, you know what is conservative really?
You know you're conservative, I'm conservative,
yeah.
And I saw a couple of folks from the conservative the conservation movement saying, yeah, you know, when did we let them have that word?
Right, right.
Although I remember the words of John Muir to Theodore Roosevelt. Who finally got a meeting with Teddy, I'm not sure if it was in the White House or if it was out in the wild, and he said, Mr. President, when are you going to stop being a child and stop this business of being a conservationist and start being a preservationist? And, you know, that's back when the National Park Service was being born.
I like that. You know, they're starting to develop... conservation zones in the oceans. There's been, you know, on top of the destruction we're seeing with the overfishing and the pollution and the plastics in the oceans and so on and the warming, there are these zones being created that have been helpful towards some species, have helped some turtles come back off the coast of California. And
right.
So, again...
Yeah, that's all going to turn topsy-turvy if they start sinking the wells. And did you notice that the Florida Tourism Board has done a flip-flop now? And the Florida Tourism Board, Preston, for the love of Pete, I'll drill off our coast. You know, what the hell? Mickey wants it.
Yeah, they probably totally infiltrated the Tourism Board and, you know, corporate agents. Bought their ways and finagled their ways.
Well, it all happened when Charlie Crist flip-flopped himself and decided that he wanted drilling off of the Florida coast. I mean, I've been down to, you know how much I love L.A., Lower Alabama, and the Gulf Coast down there. You can stand on the beach on at Gulf Shores and look out to sea, and, you know, it's not like it's a distant speck on the horizon. You can see the oil platforms. And for me, that doesn't contribute to my enjoyment of the beach.
No, you wonder. You know, I mean, these things are constantly leaking.
And right, and you know these oil balls, these sludge balls roll up on the shore and stuff like that. You know, do the people who run the hotels, and you know, granted it's overdeveloped, you know, to the gazoo on the Florida coast, do these people really, really want toxic goo balls? You know, even if there's no spill, even if there's no official spill, do they really want that crap rolling up on their beach? And do they really think that people are going to drive all that way to go to Florida to put their toes in the surf so they can look at an oil platform?
Right.
I mean, we don't like thinking about the fact that our hamburger in the grocery store came from a cow. How are we going to feel standing on the beach that we've just spent, you know, $5,000 to get to, and we look out there and we see where...
Yeah,
you get my point.
Definitely. Did you see Finding Nemo?
Yes.
Chance?
Oh, yes. We have kids in the house. So. Yeah, it's a lovely little film.
When it first started, I don't know, I wasn't liking it at first, but I kind of... And there were some elements of that I thought were very, sending a very progressive political message. I mean, there were some comments about pollution, you know, through the cartoon. And,
yeah.
Actually, there was something about working together to break free when all these fish were trapped in this big net. The scene where they're breaking out of that net, it was...
Yeah, it was a powerful message.
A political allegory.
Yeah, and the right wing hates it for that reason.
Yeah.
Of course, on the other hand, you know, having seen it, that scene with the net bothered me because little children are watching it, and it's almost like the opposite kind of message at the same time because they're seeing it and go, oh, well, okay, they can break out of the nets. No,
they
don't.
Problem,
you know? Yeah.
It can be, but that's why we're there, to say...
No, that's parenting. Yeah.
Right. And yeah.
Well, what was the penguin animated piece where the one penguin wears the six pack ring?
I've only seen parts of that one. Is that Happy Feet?
I think it is.
Or there's another one on the March something.
No, it's not March of the Penguins because March of the. But yeah, I think that's Happy Feet.
Okay.
But you know, I saw that and went. Because that's true, and you know, you think about, you were talking about the ocean, that dead zone out there that's the size of what, Kansas?
Yeah.
In the ocean.
You said the penguin was wearing the what?
Yeah, the little six pack, you know, like you buy a six pack of pop or whatever, yeah. That little plastic ring thing.
Okay.
Yeah, and that really does happen to sea creatures. They swim through it, they get stuck, and they eventually get strangled by them.
Oh yeah, and so. In the cartoon, was the penguin like struggling with it, or?
Yeah, it was a piece of adornment. I think it was like, you know, jewelry.
Okay.
But it was there for you to see, and it presented a teaching moment.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Yeah, yeah. But that plastic island floating between Hawaii and California, is that the one you're?
Yeah, yeah.
To?
The, right.
Well, there's that, and then there's like the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, which is growing.
Right.
Apparently that's from too much, you know, the fertilizers, nitrogen going into the Mississippi and then out to the Gulf. And I guess it grows too much algae.
And then and you get these vile tides. Oh, yeah, nasty stuff.
Okay, and then the algae, yeah, use up oxygen or something.
And there's a bloom. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, but well, hopefully, hey, some entrepreneur will figure out how to scoop up the algae and... make a fuel out of it. I've actually seen there's a pilot. There's some people doing that already. I saw it on Big Ideas for a Small Planet.
All you know, all this stuff is doable, and that's one thing that Obama addressed last night, and that really really spoke to me. This idea, this rejection, and it's got to be an absolute wholesale rejection of the blanket, frankly unpatriotic pessimism of the Republican Party.
Yet they can't do them.
No, we can't do it. Yeah. No, we got to have oil because we can't figure out how to use wind and solar because we're too dumb.
That's right.
But Obama referenced, I told Guy this last night, Obama referenced that generation that did so much.
Mm-hmm.
And called on, and I felt like it was a call to my generation, and because I'm only one generation removed from the Depression because I had older parents. And it's a call to find that spirit again. And I don't know what it takes to find that spirit, but I know that spirit still exists in this country. And the idea, you know, there's nothing dishonorable in sacrifice if we're sacrificing to save this country.
Yep. Yeah, the right wing has become the, you know, party of the can't. Do American spirit, and you know, they're the nattering nabobs of negativity.
That, and they're also the, you know, I've got a right wing metaphor that was mailed to me by a right winger listener that I intend to go into some evening. But It's the modern myth of the grasshopper and the ant, and it paints the grasshoppers as the liberals who want the hard-working conservatives to give them everything and the entitlement programs. B.S. You know who the grasshoppers are? The modern grasshoppers of the Republican Party and the so-called conservatives who say, well, we're just, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And so we're just going to consume everything on the planet, and too bad for, you know, whatever generation has to clean up our mess.
Right, right.
And too bad if the next generation or the generation after that just happens to not be able to live on the planet. Yeah.
You know, and they're telling us about personal responsibility when they've got this whole philosophy of irresponsibility. It's a sorry code to live by for sure.
And I kind of believe in smacking them with it now.
Yeah, yeah. And just pushing a different sort of code, you know.
Yeah, a code of responsibility.
Yeah, you know, they slip a lot of that kind of reactionary philosophy in TV dramas and stuff, you know, less explicit forms. I mean, there may be someone, a right-wing host, preaching it openly. They slip it into a lot of TV dramas and whatnot. But again, thankfully we've got production companies doing things like, Finding Nemo and, you know, talking about responsibility and, a lot of good media efforts for sure countering, that sort of, you know, philosophy of destruction.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Preston, it's been a real pleasure. I wish you a very happy Labor Day weekend. I know that you for sure will remember all the people who made Labor Day possible.
Definitely.
I don't have to tell this audience, but, you know, right-wingers and Republicans and so forth should probably be reminded that there's a lot of blood, sweat, toil, and tears that went into this holiday, and it's worth remembering.
Yeah, and thanks for your labor in your work on this network.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Preston, and a wonderful weekend to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, we'll take a little break, and if you want to get involved, there's a few minutes of program left, a little less than a half an hour. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-3333. I received in the mail today something that I was really, really happy to get. I've told you about Roger Hurricane Wilson before. He's got a new disc out. It's called Exodus, and I want to share a little bit of that with you. You can get it at his website, hurricanewilson.com. He also has a MySpace page. It is myspace.com, Roger Hurricane. And you can find the means of getting the album at either place. The album, again, is called Exodus, and Roger's an old friend of mine, and I think the world of him. And, you know, not just because he can literally play the strings off of a guitar. He's a great guy, and he has one of those stunning, just mind-bendingly dedicated work ethics as a musician. But what a player. Holy smoke, what a player. And this is a cut off of the Exodus album. I think you'll really enjoy it. It's called You Do Your Job, and I kind of went to that title. Because I was thinking about this whole business with the Republicans constantly wanting to, you know, to tear down any idea of hope, any idea of change, any idea that there's a real prospect for this nation to have a future, that we got to get it now, got to do it now, got to have it now, got to use it all up. And the title of the song is... it comes from the fact it's a piece, from Roger's perspective, it's a piece of advice, simple advice for people who think they need to tell you how to run your career. And, you know, I think I was listening to it earlier, and I think it actually translates. So from the new Roger Hurricane Wilson album, Exodus, and many thanks to Roger for sending this along, go and get this. This is just beautiful stuff. Some music that Roger has written himself, and he's a heck of a writer in his own right, and some real classics as well. You Do Your Job, from Exodus by Roger Hurricane Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
I show you real good at what you do. Between me and you, I bet you know that too. And I would say it's probably true.
That's some dandy. That is some dandy good stuff. Thank you very much, Roger Hurricane Wilson. All right. I probably wasted more time on the Ceradactyl Palinolithic vice presidential nominee than I should have this evening. But mercy, you know how I feel about the for-profit media. How's this for a headline? Palin, pioneer, maverick, and now game changer. Oh, my aching back. And now they're going to politic, speaking of backs, now they're going to politic on the back of a poor little infant with Down syndrome. An outspoken anti-abortion Republican, Palin has spoken out about her fifth child, who was diagnosed in utero with Down syndrome.
We knew through early testing he would face special challenges, and we feel privileged that God would entrust us with this gift.
And see, the baby's a gift. The baby's not a person. The baby is a thing, because gifts are things, not people.
They would entrust us with this gift and allow us unspeakable joy as he entered our lives. We have faith that every baby is created for good purpose.
Even Hitler? Pol Pot? Stalin? They were all created for good purpose, ma'am? Dang!
We have faith that every baby is created for good purpose and has potential to make this world a better place.
Gonna put that straw in that liquor bottle yet. Hitler had potential to make this world a better place. Well, that's okay. Pastor Hagee thinks he actually did. Remember that line about, well, you know, he was God's hunter and he was driving the Jews to Israel. Praise Jesus. Remember that?
We are truly blessed.
So, let's see. If John McCain is a noun and a verb in POW, what is Ceradactyl Palinolithic going to be? Noun, a verb, and look at what a marvelous mother I am. You know, the story that's being reported is that they diagnosed this child with Down syndrome in the womb. If you're going to take the little gift that God gives you, what do you need to be doing that testing for? Huh? I'm just asking. If you're just going to, if it's just, you know, if it's just like the sixth grade Christmas present swap where you draw names and, oh, great. I got a set of old maid cards. If that's all it is, that we're going to take whatever gift God gives us. What are you doing in vitro, in utero testing? Stinking hypocrites. So it is, and I'll leave that line. It is the anniversary of Katrina, and yes, Gustav is bearing down on the Gulf Coast, and it's heartbreaking to even contemplate. Bells rang throughout New Orleans at 9:38 a.m. this morning, the moment when the levees breached. I can't imagine what those bells must have meant to the people who were there. They could just as well have been bells warning people that they're on their own again, because the Bush administration is still in power. Whatever, God, Buddha, Krishna, Vishnu, Allah, Yahweh,
the great spirit, whatever, be with everyone on the Gulf Coast, please, if you're listening, if you ever do. And we had an industrial disaster here in West Virginia overnight. It was so very odd to find out this. Our friend Ann in Chicago sent me an email asking, was everyone all right? And that's what I saw this morning when I woke up. And lo and behold, last night, in between speeches, Guy James casually mentioned that he had been in Institute, West Virginia, and that was the place where once upon a time he had met Senator Jay Rockefeller. And I said, well, you know what Institute's famous for. And I went on to tell him that after Bhopal, Institute, West Virginia was the last place on the planet that still manufactured methyl isocyanate. And I said that, you know, a lot of people, while that plant was still producing that stuff, figured sooner or later one day they'd all be Bhopal'd down in the Chemical Valley. Rather grim business. So I told him all about that, and then I get up this morning and I find out that about 10:30 p.m. local time, Eastern time here, the Bayer Crop Sciences plant blew up in Institute, West Virginia. And I got to tell you, that gave me a shiver. I'm sure if Miss Kate was able to reach us this evening, she would tell me that I have got to learn to be careful about what I put in, what I whisper into the ear of the universe. Just wow. A couple of people, I think, killed, one person missing. There's a person in critical condition with horrific burns at the Pittsburgh Burn Center. A lot of people injured. It shook walls and windows a county away, the explosion did. And so my thoughts are with those folks. And tough business. Let's go right back to the phones one last time. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Well, just a little bit of mean-spiritedness here about Ms. Palin. You know, when I first heard that you picked Palin, I thought, wow, Michael Palin.
Didn't even know he was registered to vote.
Yeah, you know. But no, seriously, I mean, maybe they did that amniocentesis to just find out who the daddy was.
See, I thought about that, too, and I didn't go there. But
well, I'm willing to go there. You know, I mean, you know, this...
Well, there are questions as to whether...
looks a lot like all the other women that, you know, that McCain picks.
Yes, she does. You know, and she's
about
got...
the right age.
She's got the beauty queen creds.
Yep. He likes girls about that age. You know, his first wife was older than he was, and then... his second wife, when she picked him, was about that age. And his lobbyist that he had the thing with was about that age when he started with
same
her.
Hairstyle. Yeah.
Yeah.
She,
yeah,
now,
yeah.
Now, this one's not as blonde. Maybe he's trying to go against type just to keep Cindy from getting all nervous. If I was Cindy, I'd be sort of Xeroxing the prenup and leaving a copy of it on the pillow with the little overnight mint.
Exactly. You know, I mean, you know, And I just wondered, one of those houses that he can't remember where it was it in Alaska?
I don't know.
Sure
would be worth knowing now, wouldn't it?
You know, I mean, it looks like, you know, if dog forbid he wins, you know, we'll have a MILF as the vice president. Well, at least somebody is finally going to be in that job that has the vice part of it down.
Oh, you're just too good. You're you're way too good, Ben Birch.
I'm sorry. I just had to throw a little bit of mean-spiritedness.
Yeah,
in there.
And why not? But no, seriously. There she was announcing her pregnancy in the seventh month, and not even showing. Meanwhile, her 16-year-old daughter was laid up out of school for months on end with a terrible case of mono. Anybody for the theme from the summer place?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, just saying.
Something hinky here.
Well, seriously, I mean, am I out of line for asking why these people who would have, I mean, if she's pregnant and giving birth to little Damien, you know, that's just another little gift from God. And what do they do? What are they doing? Doing amniocentesis for the love of Pete?
Yep, just to find out who the dad.
I mean, this is a woman whose anti-abortion stance, whose anti-right of a woman to control her own body stance, is so profound that she doesn't even believe that rape should be that abortion should be legal in cases of rape or incest. You know, she wants Uncle Daddy's baby to be born.
Well, you know,
why are they having tests?
There's another thing to understand is that sometimes when you perform amniocentesis, even if you do everything just right,
things don't. Yeah, and the baby.
There's a spontaneous abortion. It's about an 8% chance, which is why a lot of people are very reluctant to perform amnio.
Yeah. So, come on, dice.
However, yeah, exactly. You know, then you could say, well, that was God's will. That was just a procedure going bad. It wasn't an abortion.
But don't think that they will not ride on that little baby's back for the next 3 or 4 months.
The poor thing will never, ever know what happened.
No. It's pathetic. Ben, these people are truly monsters.
Exactly right. Well, I think, you know, and the other thing is, I think we need to make a bumper sticker. It'll be McCain Payne 08.
Oh, I like that.
Anyhow, my friend, talk to you soon.
All right. Take care and have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye now. Hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And a couple of little announcements, just so you'll know. No programming on Monday. It's Labor Day. It is my favorite holiday of the year. It means more to me than most of the others. Everything's going to be rerun on Monday. And just to let you know, we're going to be talking next week, next Thursday. We're going to be talking with the head man from BuzzFlash, a gentleman by the name of Mark Carlin. And Mark and I are going to be talking about a conference that they've been mentioning at, over on the BuzzFlash site, a conference to bring together working folk and progressive folk and labor unions and try to meld a meeting of the minds and an understanding. And that's going to take place in Philadelphia on September the 27th. And I've had conversations with Mark, and he was really excited about what I proposed. The horn... there's only room for, you know, a little over 500 people at the conference. But I know that there are a lot more people who want to have that conference available to them and be in some way or another part of that dialogue. And with that being the case, I have volunteered the services of the horn to Mark Carlin to stream that conference to those who cannot be there in person, so that they can be there as much in person as humanly possible. It's a Saturday. It's going to run from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's just a one-day affair. Nobody has to, you know, go in deep for a lengthy hotel stay or anything. And we're going to be the streaming audio provider for that conference in Philadelphia on September the 27th. You can find out more about it at buzzflash.com. And there's only one hang-up. We got to get there. Now, I talked to the boss. I talked to Wayne. He's going to be going with me, and we're going to try to encourage some labor folks from West Virginia to go up and attend as well and be part of this conversation, part of the dialogue. Folks like David K. Johnston, whom you already know from the network, will be there. Our buddy Joe Bagent will be there. A number of other thinkers and, Richard Trumka, the immediate second in command at the AFL-CIO will be there. He's also the former president of the United Mine Workers here in West Virginia. He was a leader of the UMWA. He's going to be there, and it's going to be a great dialogue. And all we got to do is get there. Now, August, by the time we talk again, August will be over, so it's I'm not kidding when I say that August, you know, we did it again. We pulled up short. And we'll start up all over again for September. We didn't go out to Denver, so we didn't have to raise any funds for that. But I really, really think it's important for the horn to be at this conference in Philadelphia. And so I'm going to ask you something that I don't often ask. If you can, if you would help the horn to get there to do this, it would mean more than perhaps any of us know in terms of what it will do for expanding the reach of independent conversation radio in this country. So, if you...